Tonight on The Download, the founder of Source Magazine, David Mays, from the Digital Privacy Alliance, Matthew Erickson, and Let's Talk Baseball with WGN Sports' Sam Peniatovich. Now, here's your host, a man who is available to be your running mate, Justin Kaufman.
I'm a perfect running mate. I don't have any stances on anything. I don't stand for anything. I just, you know, that's what you need in a running man. A running mate. Someone who says nothing. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great show lined up tonight here to keep you company. Next 4 hours. Coming up at 7 o'clock hour, we'll talk about digital privacy. What a shocking story today. Equifax hacked personal information given. You know that's a credit score or credit company. Think of all the things you have to give them, and they can't keep it secure. And it's a conversation we're going to have before even this happened about digital privacy. The federal government is going in a different direction with technology companies and telecommunication companies, essentially saying they don't need to. This is a rollback of the Obama administration moves. The FCC moves to essentially say that you have to, if you're a telecommunications company, you have to tell us what you're doing with our information. Trump administration comes in and says, no, they don't. That's hindering business. That's too many regulation. Get rid of it. But that hasn't stopped the states. And the state of Illinois in particular is poised to be one of the first states to sort of set the model of how to deal with telecommunication digital companies, companies like Facebook, Google, others like that, that essentially track your geolocations, track your information, and sell that data to other companies, to advertisers for profit. This has been the way a lot of these companies work. And the state of Illinois is saying in some instances, especially when it comes to geolocation data, you need to tell the consumer that you're doing it. And that's what's on the table right now. A House Bill 3449 is ready to be signed by the governor, but the governor has hinted that he's going to veto the bill. So what does it mean for our future of digital privacy? We'll have that conversation coming up after the 7:30 news. Also tonight at the 8 o'clock, the big table. Dave May is going to join us. Dave May is the founder and longtime editor of The Source magazine and the creator of The Source Awards, a seminal moment in hip hop, 1995, where The Source Awards were the beginning of the East versus West Coast feud that we all are very aware of. And what happened in the 90s, it sort of started and or at least became public at the Source Awards in 1995. Talk with Dave Mays, who has moved on from the Source, but we'll talk to him about what he says is the corporatization of hip-hop music, a genre of music that is now the number one genre of music in the entire world. It has surpassed pop music. Everything in between hip-hop is number one. So we'll talk to him about where his early days of the Source magazine, which would have been in the late 80s, and his observations of the music as it has matured. Dave May is my guest tonight at the big table. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Sam Peniatovich going to be here. Big weekend for Chicago sports, of course, for the Chicago Cubs. They play the Milwaukee Brewers at Wrigley Field. They play the Brewers here 3-set, and then they got 4 games against Milwaukee later in the month. The Cardinals, again, back in the business. They're only 4 back, so we'll talk with Sam Peniatovich about what the prospects look like for the Chicago Cubs and for the Chicago White Sox as they continue to build and look towards the future. So we'll have those conversations coming up tonight in the 10 o'clock hour. We'll play Never Have I Ever as we do every Thursday, 312-981-7200. This is a simple game that you tell us what you've never done for prizes. I mean, sometimes we make it too easy. I've never had a drink of alcohol. Boom. Here's a pizza. Right? It's kind of like a half confessional, half brag. I remember Mary calls in a lot. She had the best one that said, I've never had a car with automatic locks or windows. And that's a big deal. You know why? Because I have keyless, right? Or I have a key, but I just hit the button to open the car. My car is getting old now. I mean, we're getting up into the 10, 12 year mark, right? So just this week when I was on vacation, hit the button, nothing happened. Looks like the battery or something died. And if you try to replace these keys, especially, you know, 12 years later, it's $175. So, but the key works. So now I'm back to, you know, like the unwashed, to actually unlock it with the key on the door, which I forget about half of the time. So if you're looking for an easy mark on the blocks of Chicago, just look for a silver Honda CRV. You can steal that tape deck pretty easy because I'm always forgetting to lock the door. Because I hit the button thinking it's unlocked, and I completely forget that the button doesn't work because I've been doing it for 12 years. It's a very weird kind of moment to think like, ah, that didn't work, because you're already like in motion. You're moving. It's very strange. But as Mary said, she's never had a car with automatic locks or windows. That's a great one. It's an awesome one. I had and by 10 o'clock, I'll remember it because I remember on the worst I had one. But I had an I never that was like, oh, I've never done this. And I thought about it during the vacation. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. And then, of course, forgot it. I'll remember it by 10 o'clock, though. And we'll play that at 10 o'clock. 312-981-7200. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll come back. We'll do the carry out. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. Here are today's top stories. Well, I will say this. I mean, it's hard to do any carry out without talking about Hurricane Irma as the first story and the only story, but we'll get to that, and there's much more to talk about. But our thoughts and our prayers are with the people in Florida as the hurricane continues to plot its course towards the state. I mean, it's something to look at and something to pay attention to in the next 24 to 48 hours. Credit reporting agency Equifax was hacked and over 140 million people's sensitive personal and financial information was stolen. So the next time they ask you for a credit check, maybe we should be asking them? This is a tougher one to stomach because anyone who had a credit check knows that you have to essentially give your firstborn to get your score. So I guess the next time we buy a house or apply for a credit card, we're just expected to act like nothing happened. How about I give you my first name and you give me an 850? Cool? Are we cool? I think we're cool. Amazon's looking to open a second headquarters in the United States to complement their first headquarters in Seattle. Most major cities are going to make a move to woo the online retail giant. But what about Chicago? All experts say it'll probably be Los Angeles, but I say we offer Amazon the lakefront. Just let them open a whole new factory right there in the Soldier Field parking lot. Too soon? Too soon. No, I say Amazon is in Chicago is a no-brainer. Give them the old post office over the Eisenhower, right? A huge building to try out all the fancy new drones. And it's an old post office, so you know it's got the old drawers to drop packages, the suction tubes. Right? It's already there. You need those. I mean, Chicago wins just on that. Think of all the suction tubes that are in that old building. No brainer. Steve Bannon says that the Catholic Church has a vested interest in illegal immigration. Nope. Pass. Not interested in banning flamethrowers. Nope. Same goes for Rush Limbaugh, who said meteorologists were just part of a conspiracy with Florida retail to say that the hurricane is dangerous. And Hillary Clinton telling us why she lost the election. No, please. New newsmakers. Can we get new newsmakers for the fall? All of us. Let's move on together. All of us. Anti-violence concert that was scheduled for Sox Park in September has been abruptly canceled. The concert was going to feature Macklemore, Lupe Fiasco, and Fifth Harmony, to name a few. The organizers, who were the Illinois Sports Facility Authority, said they need more time for community outreach, which I guess is a fancy new way to say sell more tickets. They say they'll be back in 2018 with a bigger, better show, probably one without Macklemore. That's my guess. A CTA passenger says he was pushed onto the tracks while standing at a subway station in the Loop. This happened a couple months back, and he's questioning why the CTA didn't warn others that this had happened. Because that's the stuff of nightmares. I mean, society's on its way out if we start pushing people right onto the tracks, right? I mean, good on the CTA for not saying anything. I don't want to get into the habit of having to belt myself to the bench till the train gets there. Because you know that's next. So, thanks for not telling me. ACT scores are in the news. Always a fun topic. The composite scores are up, but the amount of students taking it are down. So How are we supposed to feel? I'm not sure if this is a good story, bad story, indifferent. Yeah. Also, didn't I read that more students are being asked to take the SAT instead? Wasn't that the story for the last 3 years? So wouldn't that just logically mean that less kids are taking the ACT? Make up your mind, news. In weather, nice day, I guess, but all weather-related news surrounding Hurricane Irma, which continues to cause devastation in the Caribbean. Now forecasters say it's pretty much inevitable that Florida will be hit straight on, some way or another. Frantic evacuations are happening throughout the state to move to higher ground, but some of the models have the hurricane hitting the entire state in one fell swoop, so, geez. And some say after that it heads back out, then it's back to land to pummel Georgia and the Carolinas. Traffic jams, gas shortages, empty shelves, price gouging in Florida, and that was before the hurricane. No, I kid. We'll talk later tomorrow night with some of my extended family who are caught in the evacuation. Talked to my Uncle Kelly today. It's pretty interesting. In sports, the NFL kicks off tonight as the Super Bowl champs host the perennial playoff contenders in the Kansas City Chiefs. If you win the Super Bowl, you get to open the next season at home on Thursday night. If you lose the Super Bowl, you're severely punished by having to play the Bears. That's just how it goes. I would be so mad if I were the Atlanta Falcons. Not only did we lose a heartbreaker the last minute, but the Patriots get to dance and have fun and have Bon Jovi play acoustic up on the stage. I don't know who's doing what, the NFL kickoff. And the Falcons have to go to Soldier Field for the noon game that, I mean, is going to get no coverage unless Julio Jones scores touchdowns and they do cutaways. So I feel bad for the Falcons, but. But football's back. I'm excited, and I'm very aware of the concerns of the NFL, brain injuries, hypocrisy, that kind of stuff. But you know what? The NFL did get Jay Cutler out of the broadcast booth, so that makes me feel pretty, pretty good. So many questions still need to be answered by Sunday, like when do I put out the queso? Should I do that first, then the pizza rolls? Do I go something exotic I've never tried before, like a sushi burrito? Just throw it down. Lots of choices to make between now and Sunday. Also, because of the hurricane, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won't play their first game. It's being postponed. So their season opener will be next week against, yep, you know who, Chicago Bears. And that game will be in Tampa. How's that going to work? Think about that. So the Bears will be right in the middle of the aftermath, which just means that the Bucs will play hard for the state of Florida and everyone in the country will hate the Bears if we spoil it. Not to look ahead, but you know it's going to happen. Updates on the Bears roster. Defensive coordinator Vic Fangio says that Pernell McPhee, as said, to be very, very healthy, the best condition of his entire life, will play a few plays. I love that contradiction. Adam Hoge was talking about that on Roe. The idea that Pernell McPhee and the coaches are like, he's in the best shape of his entire life. And today they're like, he'll play 5-10 times. Well, what do you mean? It doesn't make any sense. Also, rookie safety Eddie Jackson's going to be the opening day starter. How about that? After that, the Bears have some serious injury concerns. Kyle Long, Danny Trevathan, Prince Ukamura, Slotty Bennigan. Made that last one up just to make sure you're paying attention. There is no Slotty Benjamin. Cubs finally got back to their winning ways last night with a 1-0 victory over the Pirates to extend their NL Central lead to 4.5 games over the Brewers. As a matter of fact, the Cardinals have hopscotched the struggling Brewers. They're only 4 back. Lester goes tonight. Could give the Cubs a 5-game lead going into the big weekend series tomorrow at Wrigley. Brewers-Cubs. Wrigley's going to be rocking. All those Zobrist wife jams. Each player is going to have one. The White Sox lost again last night. That's all I got. Actually, no, I do have this. The Sox could help the Indians set a team record tonight. Corey Kluber on the mound as the Indians go for their 15th straight win. This would make a team record for the Indians. Carlos Rodon, prove you're the ace. Stop this record from being made, right? That's what aces do. They ruin the hopes and dreams of the other team. We cool? All right. Finally tonight, nurses in Denver were fired for, how do I say this lightly, unzipping a body bag. And looking at a dead man's genitalia. I mean, I guess that's why they call corpses stiffs. Am I right? No. Can't do it. No. That's the carryout for September 7, 2017. In honor of tonight's NFL season kickoff, we've got wings. But let's be honest, they're not very good. I mean, most of the time, wings, they're just not very good. All right, coming up, we're talking about digital privacy in the state of Illinois. If the federal government's not going to do it, will the state of Illinois do it instead? Of that conversation coming up at 8 o'clock, Dave Mays joins us. Talk about his days running the Source magazine. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
I'd like to thank Mark Wahlberg for putting on T-shirts and jeans and assisting the Patriots with their opening ceremony tonight. Yeah. He's got his arms all jacked up in a shirt that's about two sizes too small, looking good.
Did he do Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch?
Didn't do Marky Mark.
No, I did not. I thought he did feel the vibrations.
It's
maybe.
About that time. You start with the rhythm. And all right, I'll stop there because it's really bad when I try to rap. It's fairly nauseating watching the Patriots celebrate another Super Bowl win.
I think it's strange to you that the Patriots get all this, like, hey, the fireworks go off and everything's great Thursday night. Can you believe it? And then the Falcons, who, I mean, is one of the biggest collapses in NFL history, but they have to go on the road and play the Bears on Sunday, the 3-13 Bears.
That's your door prize, Atlanta. That's your door prize.
Something tells me, though, the Patriots would not have this disrespect. If the Falcons would have won that game, the Patriots would still have a Monday night football game to start the next year.
Well, what was it? It was 28-3 in the third quarter.
I know. It's amazing.
Late in the third quarter.
So they, right? Your point is they deserve it.
I mean, come on, boys. You know, and not only that, I can't wait until the post-game press conference because Bill Belichick's so entertaining.
Yeah.
Him in his cutoff hoodie there. Yeah. He's, you know, he's very dynamic at the podium.
We ran the ball pretty well.
And he's a jerk, too.
Tell us how you really feel, Rob. I love it. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Dave Mays is going to join us. Dave Mays was the founder and longtime editor or publisher of the Source magazine. Source magazine, really for a long time, for decades, was considered to be the Bible of the hip-hop industry. It created the Source Awards, which in 1995 was the spot that many will credit to be the beginning of the East versus West Coast rivalry in hip-hop that became so big that claimed the lives of Tupac Shakur and Notorious B.I.G. So we'll talk with Dave Mays, who's in Chicago, who no longer is with The Source. He does the Hip Hop Weekly, does some other things, but we'll talk with him about his bird's eye view and his sort of also, you know, he's stepping away from it a little bit, his understanding of the genre that is now the most popular in music around the world and how that came from the humble beginnings in the mid to late 80s to where it is today. So talking Dave Mays, my guest at the big table, coming up the 8 o'clock hour. Well, if the news today that the credit site Equifax was hacked and 143 million Americans' sensitive information was stolen isn't enough to get you worried about your privacy, I don't know what will. It's a story that we hear far too often, and far too often our government is lax in protecting our privacy. Take the federal government rollbacks this spring that essentially gave telecommunication companies the right to not tell us what they're doing with our sensitive information, like geolocations and browsing histories. But that hasn't stopped states from stepping in and leading the way when it comes to privacy protections. Illinois is poised to lead the way in the country with a few bills centered around privacy. HB 3449 is a bill that's awaiting the governor's signature. It has to do with tech companies alerting consumers when they're tracking them and using that data to share with third parties like advertisers. This bill is centered also around children who are being tracked and their information, including their school and medical information, being collected and sold and possibly shared and compromised. But with all that being said, Facebook, Google, and the phone companies are in the business of sharing your info, so they aren't on board, and they're pushing back against the bill, and Governor Rauner has hinted that he will veto the measure. In studio tonight, Matthew Erickson. He's an industry outreach director for the Digital Privacy Alliance. Matthew, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
That was a lot of words. Sorry about that. All right, let's get to this. This is a fascinating discussion and one that's happening all over the country, not just in Illinois. But this really starts at the federal level. The Obama administration had gone to great lengths at the FCC to really regulate telecommunication companies and what they do with our data. the Trump administration rolled that back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the FCC under Obama set up as a new series of regulations in October that would have gone into effect in stages across this year, setting pretty decent privacy protections for everyday Americans on internet service providers. This is one of the first targets of policy rollbacks by the Trump administration, and as you saw, effective lobbying through large big data.
A lot of those companies, those internet service providers, they said that this was unfair because this didn't apply to Facebook and Google and other digital companies. They got a leg up in competition. So there was some merit in the way that it was designed, that it gave more competitive advantage to some companies in the same business.
Well, and the one thing with internet service providers, a lot of America is covered by maybe one or two at most ISPs. And unlike, say, Google, you can use, say, DuckDuckGo for searches. But if the only ISP in town is selling your data, there is no free market choice there, and you're stuck with whatever they have you. And with today's e-government initiatives, with online learning, with just communicating with family across the country, you can't really get by without internet access in reality. So there is effective protections necessary.
So this got rolled back, but it's surprising to me that a handful of states have said, we're not going to follow that course. We're going to create our own set of legislation to deal with privacy issues. And Illinois being one of the leaders for all the things that we're behind on when it comes to finances and pensions, everything else, we are poised to be a leader when it comes to privacy protections, when it comes to the internet.
Yeah, we are. The General Assembly is full of people who just, they get privacy. It's not politicians picking up a topic for some cheap wins. These are people that understand privacy. They value their own privacy, and they see the role that Illinois can play stepping up. Illinois already has the nation's strongest biometric information privacy law, so like fingerprints, using facial recognition systems. We have the strongest protections on that in the country, and so this is kind of an extension of that. We're really ahead of the ball across the entire U.S. with this.
And there are a couple of bills that are circulating through that have to do with different parts of privacy, but the one that we're talking about tonight really has to do with geolocations. And this is the idea that your smartphone, your iPad, or any device that actually can track you, that uses the internet, is sort of broadcasting or being able to tell the service providers where you're at, what you're doing, essentially, and be able to use that information.
Yeah. And the bill is really short. It's four pages, including a lot of boilerplate that just has to be on every law. That's like two pages worth on the bill. It's a simple bill that if somebody is tracking your information, your geolocation information, in a precise manner, so like not just saying like what neighborhood you're in, but specifically where you are,
right,
like what base
like
you're standing on.
Like a dot on the map, right,
yeah,
right.
Like what we're used to on maps these days.
Right.
They have to let you know that they're doing this and what they're doing with it.
And so the idea would be that they would have to prompt us in some way. There would be some notification that says they don't have to stop doing it. They just have to tell us they're doing it, and it would be the kind of thing like a service agreement, if will, like an I agree, check this box kind of thing.
Yeah, and for example, on iOS, you actually have to give a reason why you need geolocation information when you use those services on the phone, and the OS pops up that little window asking if you want to let the app use that. And that's a great place to put a disclaimer like this. You're not even increasing the amount of click-throughs that a user has to see. You simply say, hey, we're taking this data. Can we get access to your GPS? We're going to be doing X and Y with it for reason Z, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah. And I mentioned the thing about children as well, because this has really been what this is about, because children with their devices and their phones and tablets that they use, they're being tracked, and seeing that we now know, you know, these companies have sensitive information like where they go to school or where their medical treatment is at, things of that nature, that as a parent, people don't want, you know, that information to fall into the wrong hands, right?
Definitely. I recently was on a news station across town on the TV, demoing how children's games targeted at the under 13 crowd, and for everyone out there, basically children are allowed to interact on the internet in a legal sense once they turn 13. It's at that point legislators have essentially decided that their kids are up enough on being able to have some sense of stranger danger. But these are kids apps targeting little kids. And right as the app starts, before you even get to the main screen, it's still just loading, and it's sending precise, like we're talking down to the foot geolocation information, out to not the app developers, but to third-party advertising companies, third-party data brokers. And from there, you don't know where the data is going to. You don't know what's going on with the data. Somebody might access the data by a profile on your kid, and all of a sudden they now know where they go to school, where they go to soccer practice, any amount of information. Recently, the AccuWeather app made headlines by broadcasting data like this. AccuWeather, to their credit, says that it was an accident and they stopped use of this advertising assist package. But the advertising package that they were using notes that it's good to track people so you can see them go to work, go home, go shopping, go to soccer practice. And what are they doing? They're going to soccer practice. Yeah. They're bringing their kids there. Now we're bringing in children's data in the mission of an advertising company.
Well, HB 3449 is on the governor's desk. We're talking with Matthew Erickson. He's an industry outreach director for the Digital Privacy Alliance, a group that has helped, is supportive of this legislation. Let's talk about some of the opposition here. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested because Facebook, Google, the companies you talk about, apps, I mean, this is how they make money. The business plan and model of a Facebook or a Google is you can use our services for free because you are the product. Mm-hmm. And that is the business model that they have created. They don't want to get into a game where they have to tell you every single time that they're using your product, you as mm-hmm. a product, to make money. And I can understand that a little bit in the way that we should be better, I guess, better educated consumers in that regard. Why do we need the government to step in and be able to throw a prompt up for that?
Well, and that's, as you said, be better educated consumers. We're not looking to end the process of using personal data for advertising metrics. There's a lot of really cool things that can happen with that. Say, for example, I use a photo sharing service and I upload my vacation photos, and they take a look at the geolocation tags on my photos and start showing me ads for cheap airfare to where I want to go on vacation. That's great. The airline gets better ROI on their ads, and I get cheap airfare for where I want to go anyway. Like, everyone wins there. What we want to see, though, is a explicit and transparent relationship here. Like, it's cool to be data mined, as long as you are agreeing to that and knowing that you're getting these wonderful, amazing, like, really whiz-bang Star Trek services for vastly reduced or cost or free.
Right.
That's all we're trying to get out of this. And the industry has not shown itself as able to self-regulate in this regards. And typically when an industry can't self-regulate, that's when the government does.
All right. So the other, I'm just reading up on it today, the other sort of point being made by people who oppose this measure really has to do with litigation. The idea that you're opening up, so there's been some parts and some places that have said, hey, this is just going to be a class action lawsuit bonanza with apps that didn't do it right and the money it takes for Facebook to hire the right lawyer to write it the right way. There's a lot of small businesses in the app world that are going to be on the hook for not only paying for legal services to get it right, but then also defending themselves when they get it wrong. Is there any merit in the idea that this could be extra litigation in a world where some people want to see that go away?
Absolutely not. There's a lot of answers on the question. Let's start with the first. We heard the industry come back and push back on this. Originally, the bill included what's called a private right of action, which is it's the right to sue. And that was expressly removed from the bill. After working with and trying to come to compromise with industry groups, they continued saying that this was going to be a class action nightmare after we had already worked with them on this. So it's a little disingenuous there. And then just on the matter of small businesses here, this bill is simple. It's simple to comply with. It's simple to make sure you're doing the right stuff.
And I would also assume, a simple boilerplate on what you would be asking for in a prompt. It's not like you have to hire high-end lawyers to make sure you got it right. I mean, it's going to be one sort of universal thing that we use.
Yeah, it's just a little bit of boilerplate, and you move on with life.
Right.
And whenever you change what you're doing to the data, sure, then you need to update that pop-up, which the user sees only once, and move on with life.
Okay, so the next question I have is really about politics. And this is where it kind of gets me, because I'm like, okay, is it a Republican-Democrat split? Is it a conservative-liberal split? Is it a big business, small business? Because I feel like a lot of these issues are issues that we know part and parcel with someone who considers themselves to have conservative values. You know, get the big business out of my business. So where does that kind of flow? I mean, is the idea of putting prompts on privacy a liberal or conservative ideal?
Honestly, it's our view at the DPA that this is it's a really bipartisan thing. I mean, to take a look from the liberal side, we're looking for the government to step in where industry's faltered. And from a more conservative take, a lot of conservative folks just want to be left alone. And this legislation helps them just be left alone, where right now there's really no power to do that.
Matthew Erickson is the Industry Outreach Director for the Digital Privacy Alliance. He's supporting the HB 3449, which is really to let consumers know when their geolocation information is being used by tech and internet service providers, companies of that nature. Matthew, thanks for coming in and sharing some your thoughts on this issue, and we'll see how this kind of moves through the governor's office.
All right, thank you very much.
And my whole crew is lounging, celebrating every day, no more public housing. Thinking back on my one-room shack, now my mom pimps a act with minks on her back. And she loves to show me off, of course. Smiles every time my face is up in the sauce. We used to fuss when the landlord dissed us. No heat, wonder why Christmas missed us. Birthdays was the worst day.
Not like getting your magazine shot out in one of the most popular rap songs of all time. Yeah, so that's pretty nice.
Yeah, we discovered him, you know, brought his unsigned demo tape up to a young Puff Combs when he was getting Bad Boy, you know, off the ground.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, one of the legendary names of hip-hop. You may not know the name Dave Mays, but you definitely know his work. Mays started The Source magazine, which many claim to be the biggest voice in rap journalism history. It was started by Mays almost 30 years ago at Harvard University. In the subsequent decades, The Source has become the Bible for the emerging industry and even started its own award show. But back in 2006, Mays split from The Source after he lost control of the company to a private equity firm. He and his partner Ray Benzino stayed in the publishing business, though, launching Hip Hop Weekly, a magazine that grew year after year after year. Mays has been both a vocal cheerleader and an outspoken critic of the hip-hop industrial complex, oftentimes rallying against corporatization of the music. In one past interview, Mays said that hip-hop lost its way when Tupac was shot and killed in Las Vegas. Well, today, September 7th, is the 21st anniversary of the day that Tupac was shot. He died a week later. Tonight, a conversation about journalism, street culture, and the music that now is the most popular genre in the world with a man who knows all about it, Dave Mays. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the big table here at The Download. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. You too. Thank you. Very, very happy to be here.
What's it mean for you to hear that? I mean, I kind of saw surprise in your eyes that, you know, this is the 21st anniversary. Today was the day that Tupac was shot.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was interesting when you mentioned that as we were preparing, you know, to talk about this stuff. And so, yeah, it's that's a meaningful date, obviously, in hip-hop history. And here we are on the anniversary to have some pretty interesting discussion.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when I was reading about you talked about Tupac being really one of the artists who was socially and politically conscious. He spoke from the heart. He didn't care necessarily about the record industry. He almost represents the end of one chapter and the beginning of another when it comes to hip hop.
Yes, that's one of the, in my opinion, and I think that's accurate. That's a point of view I've been bringing up for some time now, you know, with the movie that came out recently and a lot of the other stuff, these documentaries and different things going on. But yeah, I believe very strongly that, yeah, that was kind of like a major turning point in hip hop history. You know, Tupac was at the, you know, at the height of the industry at the time. He was, you know, the biggest star in the game. And, you know, he was everything that hip hop was really all about as it had evolved from, you know, the 1970s up into that point.
The combination of street culture, but also being able to talk about the issues of his community. I mean, there was everything in that music, being a poet, and not to mention the music. I mean, there was definitely the full package.
Yep, multimedia, movie star, charisma, you know, again, social consciousness, and, all wrapped up into one. And so when he got, you know, killed, it really, you know, combined with the subsequent downfall of Death Row, you know, it just created this huge kind of vacuum in the business and the industry. And, you know, I think that's when, you know, things started to change for the worse.
Dave, it feels like I have a historian in the studio when it comes to hip hop. I mean, we start talking about your days at Harvard, being a student, having your own show and wanting to put a newsletter together to promote that show. Take us back to what was 1987, 1988. Yes. What attracted you first off to hip hop at that time, and what were you trying to accomplish in Boston?
Well, you know, I grew up in Washington D.C. and you know, just kind of got into black music and black culture coming up, you know, in the city, going through the public school systems, stuff like that. Hip hop wasn't that big in D.C. because we had go-go music. That's a whole nother, you know, smaller story. But when I got to Harvard, you know, I'd been into hip hop a little bit, and I started this radio show, actually, as a host on a radio show on the college station. And, you know, just, you know, I love the music, and the idea for The Source came out of, you know, interacting with listeners to my show, wanting to know information about what was going on in hip hop. There was no, you know, real voice for it at the time.
There was no cable television or anything like that that was selling 24/7 the story of hip hop.
Not even, you know, 1 second, like one second.
Right,
there was
right.
You know, hip hop anywhere. No radio stations, no television coverage, no magazines, no newspaper. Nobody was covering hip hop at all. Yeah, just, you know, I was always an entrepreneur, and just got this idea to kind of create the Rolling Stone of the hip hop generation. That was really my idea when I first started.
When did you recognize? I mean, when did it go from a newsletter to something that you realized had impact in hip hop? I mean, you moved to New York City, you were able to do more, again filling a niche that no one was in. But when did you recognize that The Source was The Source?
It happened, you know, pretty quickly. It grew pretty fast. I would say, you know, probably by 1990, when I graduated, moved to New York, set up our offices in New York City. You know, that was kind of when we started to really have a little bit of momentum and stuff, but it grew, you know, step by step throughout the 90s. It just kept growing.
What do you look at in the success? Was it word of mouth? Was it the fact that the artists were giving respect to the magazine? What was it that you think was the secret ingredient that kept you moving forward in that business?
I mean, it was a number of things, being first, but being authentic, you know, and that kind of goes to one of the other topics you brought up, you know, authenticity when dealing in hip hop. So, you know, I think that's really, you know, from the editorial content to the way the business was managed and conducted, you know, just being kind of ahead of our time with a lot of things. Branding was something that magazines weren't doing back then, or any media companies mm-hmm. weren't really focusing on branding in the way it's, you know, all the rage, you know, these days. And that's when things like the Source Awards and other spin-offs.
And we'll get to the Source Awards as well. It's such a huge, iconic part of pop culture history. But I want to ask about, you know, in those early days, and I do consider, I mean, it's sort of classified as rap journalism. Being an upstart where you wanted to cover an industry that no one else was covering, and, you know, and it was becoming more and more popular, did you find yourself having to write more positive stuff or to help with people's careers and things of that, as opposed to giving negative reviews or writing about issues in the community that people didn't want to talk about. Talk about that, the early days of trying to put, you know, sort of find your footprint, find your for way when dealing with an industry and an area that really hadn't had any media.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, there's, a couple aspects of kind of the answer to that. You know, I think on the one hand, I did feel like the hip-hop was sort of, you know, very misunderstood and under attack, you know, by the mainstream, by everybody and everything. There was, you know, there was us who loved hip-hop, this young generation of people, and, you know, that was growing, but and then there was everybody else. So I felt a kind of a need and an obligation to kind of be the voice of the culture and be kind of, you know, a representative, you know, for hip-hop. You know, as a media outlet. But when it comes to being necessarily positive, you know, no, I mean, the Source was very respected because it had credibility. And, you know, that was also something that was a, you know, it is in all media, it's a fine line. And,
right.
You know, it was at the time in hip hop. But, you know, we were honest and sometimes that, you know, that upset people. But, you know, generally, I've always said, you know, you can choose to be kind of the National Enquirer or you can choose to be, you know, more like the New York Times. Now, these days, there's not that much of a difference necessarily, we've come to learn. But, you know, you get the idea.
Dave Mays is my guest in studio, the founder and publisher of The Source for so many years, and also now Dave Mays Media. He is going to be featured in the documentary that Fox is putting out on Biggie and Tupac, coming out on September 24th. He's also got a podcast, radio show he's working on here. He's relocated to Chicago. Dave Mays, my guest at the big table tonight. We'll continue the conversation after break. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me tonight at the big table. Dave Mays, the creator, founder, publisher of The Source magazine, and of course The Source Awards, which is a huge deal. And like I said, one of the more iconic award shows in pop culture history. Dave Mays in Chicago now, longtime East Coast guy in New York City and born in Washington, D.C., went to Harvard, but he's relocated to Chicago. He's working on some new projects. We'll get into that in a little bit. He's also going to be featured in the documentary on Fox coming up here on September 24th, the documentary on Biggie and Tupac, of course, today, the 21st anniversary of the shooting of Tupac Shakur. All right, let's talk about, right before the break, you said something about so many forces that aligned against hip-hop emerging into the mainstream. And this, we're talking about the 90s. We're talking about early 90s, probably, right, late 80s. Mm-hmm. This idea that there were a lot of forces that were aligned to essentially say the culture, the street culture, the lyrics, everything that's being rapped about, everything involved here. This is not American values. We don't want it to be a part of our society. Politicians got in the act. I mean, it was a real thing. NWA played center stage on this. But The Source was in there, too. The Source emerged at that point to be almost, like I said, the Bible of an emerging industry, a place that could be authentic. What do you think about the idea of hip-hop and street culture, the idea that there was so much fervor around keeping this art form down?
Well, you know, there was a lot of a resistance because, you know, hip-hop was around to stay. You know, a lot of people thought it was a fad in the 70s, 80s, you know, thought it was going to go the way of disco. But it just kept growing and growing, and it was very organic and very, you know, authentic. And, you know, it was being consumed by a mass market young white audience. And so, you know, you had a lot of parents and, you know, older people and the media and everything that didn't like the influence that hip hop was having. So, you know, it was, you know, a lot of forces.
Yeah.
As you
said, it was not unlike rock and roll before it, but a resist authority. A more revolutionary kind of music that said, you know, challenge a lot of the core ideals of the society we live in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess for me, what I find interesting about it is that for years, and you've talked about this in interviews, it feels like the record industry, the world has tried everything it possibly can to extract the street culture part of hip-hop. Deliver hip-hop in a packaged bow with a, here it is, this is perfect for consumption for American mainstream. But they've gone to extreme lengths, but the street culture continues to come back, and it continues to be the authentic voice and what resonates in the music.
Yeah, well, I mean, hip-hop draws its lifeblood, let's say, from the streets. And, you know, hip-hop was born out of the streets and born out of the conditions in the inner cities of America. So, you know, hip-hop's DNA is integrally linked to the conditions of inner cities. You know, it was created in the Bronx, in the South Bronx. That's where it started, you know, as a culture, and evolved and, of course, spread. And unfortunately, as the music and the business grew, the money, which was at some point kind of going back into those communities more so, you know, stopped. And that also goes back to Tupac and other things that changed in the business and the control of the music. But ultimately, unfortunately, it hasn't, you know, our inner cities have continued to suffer and continue to, you know,
the same issues
to get worse.
Same issues from the 70s and 80s that started hip hop, like you said, in the South Bronx, are issues today that many inner city communities are still dealing with. And like you said, in worse ways.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a thing where a lot of times companies don't want, you know, they want the street, they want the authenticity, but they don't want kind of the things that come with the territory. And, you know, sometimes that's a difficult balance. That's something that I think I was able to do well, and that the Source, you know, really mm-hmm. did well. And, you know, I think that, you know, was a key to our success.
You know, one of the famed Source beefs that you had was with Eminem. And Interscope Records. Interscope Records, of course, we just saw the Defiant Ones in HBO about Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre and all the things that we're talking about here about authenticity and Death Row Records and everything in between. You know, that story is told through one lens. It's told through the main players in that, Jimmy and Dr. Dre and the others, about how they changed hip-hop. From the Source magazine, a magazine that's on the street, did they change hip hop? Did Death Row Records and Interscope, more importantly, and the record companies that were referenced in that series, did they change hip hop for the better?
I don't know for the better. They certainly were. You know, they were the major record labels for many, many years, you know, they had a lot to do with, you know, hip hop's evolution and development. You know, as far as whether it was for the better, I mean, I think, you know, like I said, I personally think hip hop has gone into, you know, a worse state since the late 1990s. And, you know, a lot of the...
Why? What happened? It's just, is more money on the line? What's more mainstream?
I think it just became more of a corporate product than a, you know, a natural expression of art and culture. And, you know, just a business and, you know, that and the people making the decisions of that business are really the ones that a lot of times people don't recognize, you know, have a lot more control than you think over what images and what voices get out there to the mass market and to the world. It's not just... You know,
yeah, it's not organic.
No,
it's not like somebody makes a track and it's such a great bumping track and it's got to be on the radio. We just got this fresh off the presses. No, it doesn't work that way.
Exactly. There's a lot more. A lot more to it. A lot more control over the music industry. There has been for a long time.
Was the writing on the wall? I mean, when you were at Source and you were running that magazine and you were doing a magazine on the heart and soul of hip hop. Could you tell that it was becoming more of a mainstream industry, that it was becoming a product?
Well, sure. I mean, I was part of that. I mean, I was driving that. Again, you know, that's one of my jobs, was again to be that bridge between the business world and the corporate world and hip hop as a culture and the streets. And that was, I was at the forefront of doing that. But again, doing it in a way that had not just authenticity, but just respect for the culture and for the people and the places that the culture comes from. And, you know, that's kind of something that, you know, I don't think a lot of other corporations and executives necessarily had as a, you know, as a priority.
Let's do this. Let's take a break and we'll get an update on tonight's news. When we come back, I want to talk about a lot of the story of hip-hop, and Source Magazine plays a big role in this. The Source Awards come to mind. Really focuses, especially in the 90s, around this East versus West Coast rivalry. And everyone knows this, Tupac, Biggie. And the Source Awards plays a role in that, the 1995 Source Awards. But I want to get your take, you know, get your perspective as someone who's at the center, created that award show, put that all together. And how much in history, as we now look to, geez, that's 20-plus years ago, do we still remember it the same way? Are we telling the story of hip-hop and how it emerged in the right way? Dave Mays, my guest tonight. He is the founder and creator of The Source Magazine, a magazine that, really was considered to be the Bible of the emerging hip-hop industry in the 80s and 90s. Dave Mays relocated here to Chicago. He's got some new business stuff. We'll talk about that coming up in the second half. Dave, all right, we'll take a quick break. And we'll get the news. We'll come back. More at the Big Table. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Sam Panionovich is going to be here. We're going to talk about the month of September as it comes to Chicago baseball. The Chicago Cubs and the Milwaukee Brewers playing at Wrigley Field tomorrow. Set a three-game set this weekend. Chicago White Sox, well, that's a different story. We'll talk about the future of the White Sox as well coming up 9 o'clock hour. My guest tonight at the big table, Dave Mays, started The Source Magazine, The Source Awards, longtime legendary voice in rap journalism, hip-hop, music in studio as he has relocated to Chicago. We East Coast guy, went to Harvard, made his name in New York City, grew up in Washington, D.C., but now he's here in Chicago. We'll talk about that in just a moment. You know, we left the conversation saying, is history remembering hip-hop in the right way? And let's go right to one of the biggest storylines that The Source is a big part of was the East versus West Coast rivalry, which a lot will pay. I mean, you go on YouTube right now, there's a million clips of 1995 Source Awards sort of being the beginning of the hip-hop rivalry that we know so well between Death Row Records and Biggie and East Coast Squad. So are we remembering correctly?
Well, I think, I think that there is a lot of information and sort of misperception about that era and where the Source Awards fit in and, you know, just what this whole thing was. And, you know, it has a lot to do with all the attention that's been focused around Biggie and Tupac and their, you know, their deaths and their right. murders and being unsolved still, you know, to this day. You know, all the attention surrounding that, and that naturally has, you know, tied into coverage of the East-West rivalry. The East-West rivalry started, you know, many, many years before all this, in the early 1990s, New York was big. You know, New York was running hip-hop throughout the 80s. There really weren't too many artists that came from anywhere other than New York that were popular, you know, really big stars in hip-hop in the 80s. And New Yorkers were very kind of smug about, you know, their hip-hop, and they kind of looked down on everybody coming from other parts of the country and different types of music and sounds that people who were creating hip-hop in other areas were doing. So, there was this, you know, feeling amongst people on the West Coast from the beginning, you know, like, you know, yeah. you know, we don't get our props out of New York, and, you know, New York being the media capital, you know, of the world still, and a lot of things still, you know.
And I was going to say, you know, as much as that this is a well-known thing in hip-hop, it's also a well-known thing in entertainment. It's not just rap music. Mm-hmm. It's acting. It's everything else that there's a little bit of animosity among the coasts.
Yes.
Continue.
But that's really where it started. So in the late 80s, when, first N.W.A. and then, through Dr. Dre and then the emergence of Death Row, you know, that's when the West Coast really became, you know, the dominant force in hip hop and sort of took the, you know, the title from New York and from the East Coast. So during that period of shift, you know, there was this tension where a lot of artists would talk about it or make songs or do different things. And this was, you know, years and years, again, before the 95. This is in the early 90s. Tim Dog, F. Compton, and different songs like that. So by the time the Source Awards came around, the whole thing also was much more complicated by what happened with Tupac in particular. Long before he was affiliated with Death Row Records, Tupac was coming to New York City. Tupac was getting involved, hanging out with guys in New York City. Tupac gets shot, you know, at the studio, this, you know, famous incident and story that's been told. And that really was the beginning of Tupac having a problem with people on the East Coast and in New York in particular.
And he had a platform to,
in his opinion, they were linked to Biggie, and that's when he started, you know, that's really when the rivalry between Tupac and Biggie started.
You being a New York publication, Source, East Coast, grew up in D.C., started in Boston. Did you feel that tension? Did you feel the tension? Did you feel it in a personal way that you were New York hip-hop media, that L.A. was being disrespectful to New York? I mean, how did you approach what was happening in rap music?
Well, you know, I as the Source and as the premier voice for hip hop, you know, I felt it was my job to, you know, be above that and try to, not even above that, but just to make sure that that New York bias and stuff didn't, you know, kind of seep into our magazine and, you know, dominate things or even into our business dealings. And, you know, I came from D.C., like I said earlier, was a place where hip hop really was not like what it was in New York and certain other East Coast cities at the time and for many years. So I didn't have the kind of New York thing. And even Boston as a city in those days, Boston was one of the only cities on the East Coast where, you know, in the streets and in the hood, they were listening to, you know, music from all over the country, the Ghetto Boys and N.W.A., stuff that people in New York weren't listening to. In New York City, they weren't listening to that stuff at that time. You know, I had an open mind, you know, musically in terms of my environments that I've been around, and I hadn't come from, you know, a lot of people in New York and their perspective. So I went into it, you know, very intentionally trying to make sure. And you can look at early issues of The Source with different West Coast artists that
early,
were on the cover.
Yeah, early with Dr. Dre, right. You know, I'm interested because I wonder how much, from your vantage point, from your where you sat as the guy running The Source, you are The Source magazine. How much did it hurt hip-hop that this was a storyline that was extracted from mainstream media, that this, out of all the music that was being produced all over the country, an emerging creative music, was being dominated by a beef that MTV loved, and that every mainstream media loved? I mean, it became much more than just a hip-hop beef. It became sort of a mainstream beef. Tom Brokaw talking about it. I mean, how much did that help, or how much did it hurt hip-hop?
Oh, I think a lot of that helped, you know, because, again, it just fueled the those of us, again, that were in the culture and in the fight. And, you know, we didn't, you know, that just made us more determined. Yeah, I think all that stuff, you know, really helped.
For you, you know, and I mentioned at the beginning, Source Magazine, in 2006, you got out of it. And, you know, you had an issue where a private equity firm essentially took control. And you look back out at interviews and you talk about how, you know, you make mistakes and it was a money mistake and you let someone have too much control of the company and they were able to take advantage. That, the beef with Eminem, some of the early editorial things that happened with the magazine. How much did you learn from your time at The Source? I mean, because you've been very honest and open with your interviews about making mistakes but learning from them. You know, when you look back on your time at that magazine, especially, it's such an amazing time. I mean, decade after decade of being the, like I said, the Bible of the rap industry. Is it a positive memory for you? And what did you learn from your mistakes?
I've learned a lot, and I hope to you know, kind of prove that out more being here in Chicago and some of the things that I have planned. You know, it was a difficult experience. You know, I was very young when I started The Source. I was 19. You know, this was like, you know, a one sheet newsletter that I created, you know, just a little idea out of my dorm room and, you know, made it into a reality and, you know, lost it very kind of just, some ways naively at that point, just in terms of the type of deals that I got myself into financially and And then to kind of lose it very abruptly like that, it was a lot. But in the end, I learned a tremendous amount, and it's made me more a better person today. And it's not how you get down or how you fall down; it's how you get back up. Really that defines you. So.
Well, you've determined to restart and relocate here in Chicago. You got Dave Mays Media. Talk about, because you mentioned to me that you're starting a podcast about whether or not Chicago can be the epicenter of the new epicenter of the hip hop community. That's starting up. Is it learning from the experiences you had both at The Source and Hip Hop Weekly and taking those experiences and bringing new media projects to Chicago?
Yeah, I think there's just, the right time now. It's a time where I think, hip-hop has an opportunity to kind of bridge the gap and bring together these generations now, because you have people going into their, in their 50s who have grown up on hip-hop, and now you have this younger generation. And while they may have, different musical tastes and different, kind of perspectives on things, ultimately I feel like there's a connection now between these generations that can be made, that these young people today, are kind of, interested in social and political issues and interested in, looking at things, around us in this world in a sort of, more real kind of way than the things that are kind of projected and portrayed to us by the media and by, it's a lot of hype out there that everybody's seeing. And that's really one of the things that made hip hop so, what its appeal was in the early days, to people like myself, 16, 15, 17, whatever year old at that time was, it was just like we connected, with the music and with the voices. So, with people like Chance the Rapper here in this city, I think, he's remarkable in what he's doing. And I think he could prove to be, a very pivotal person in what happens with the future of hip hop because of, him really being the first artist to, to stay completely independent, have complete, control right. over his music and his brand and his career.
And in a way, I think about him and I think about Chicago. He has gone back to some of the things we talked about even in this interview at the beginning of what the spirit of hip-hop is, to be able to create music and be able to have a strong message and incorporate street culture without it sort of being gobbled up by the corporatization of an industry.
Yeah. I think, Chicago also... has attracted me because of, the problems that are going on here in the city. And again, if I can be a part of revitalizing hip hop and bringing it back to a period of time where, it was a part of social and political issues and thinking and talking about things like what's going on here in the city with the violence, we will find that it will be a part of fixing those problems, which is how I saw hip hop and what I saw it personally was doing until it kind of got derailed and started going on a different course.
Well, how do you keep it from doing that? Because, it's interesting to me because Chance is a good example of a guy who, yes, he's independent, but he's also in Kit Kat commercials. At a certain point, the consumers want him. They want him and advertisers want him. And at a certain point, you see the cycle again. And putting him to a side for a second, you do have two faces of hip-hop. You have a burgeoning creative experience. If you just go to Apple Music and look at the top 50 tracks on a list for hip-hop, there's all these great names that are wildly popular that you may not have heard. They're talking about where they're from. They're talking about political and social issues. And then you also have... rappers that are on Kiss FM, and that are like the top 40 type stuff that continues to sort of be the face to people who are uninitiated. How do you merge that as a creative art form? How do you merge those two things? How do you make those two things work together?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Back in the 90s, there were various types of hip hop, you know, that had existed. You had MC Hammer, you had Vanilla Ice, you had, you know, other successful forms of rap music at the time. But ultimately, there was still a cohesiveness to the culture and an authenticity to the culture. And now it's been all broken up, and you know, you have, you know, everything's much more segmented. This weekend, I went to this festival. Here, what was the name of the festival? You remember?
The Breaks.
Yeah, really, man, had an awesome time there. They had some of the best underground hip hop artists that, you know, just really talented lyrically, saying things, and you know, it was a mostly white young audience that, you know, loved the show, and it's just, again, it's a different. Whole different, you know, market here than you have, you know, your drill music and your trap music, and then you have your, you know, your, it's just very segmented, and I think there is a way to bring it back, but all it really goes back to it being a culture, and these aren't just styles of music, but there's an underlying culture that helps unify everything. And so if that culture has a voice in the media, which is also what I did with The Source, was really be a voice for the culture. There's really no voice at all for the culture anymore. You have people covering the music and, you know, what's perceived as hip-hop and entertainment on a very kind of surface level, but there's nobody that's speaking for the culture.
You know, when you're talking about culture and you talk about street culture and we've talked about throughout the hour, you know, when you say you want to be in Chicago because you want to deal with some of the issues that are affecting the communities here, violence in particular, and yet, and some people have texted in and asked me these same questions about, you know, some see hip hop and some see rap music as glorifying gang membership, drugs, selling drugs, illicit behavior, crime, things of that nature that are some of the same ills that are affecting these communities you want to help. So how do you, I mean, I think I know the answer, because I think these are artists that are reflecting their experiences. They're not glorifying, they're reflecting it. But what's your answer to the idea that there's this great contrast in the music where the things that, you know, hip hop artists rap about are the same things that are troubling the communities and that they're trying to get over. So there is this sort of head scratcher about the glorification of some of these things.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, it's a complex situation. You know, on the one hand, it goes back to what I was saying a little bit earlier, that a lot of people don't recognize the extent to which, you know, the corporate forces have controlled the imagery and some of the things that are put out there. And to the point where, yes, you know, hip hop in some ways, I feel, has had some negative effects over these past 10 or 15 years, because it hasn't been allowed to evolve organically the way that it...
Because this kind of music makes money, let's say it's drill or whatever it is, it makes money, keep making money, we don't care what the effect is on the community.
That may be, you know, one of the reasons, and there may be others, you know, but, you know, on the other hand, if we're going to have, you know, conversations about why the inner city communities in Chicago are the way they are, it's certainly not because of hip hop, not a chance. You know, so anyone that's thinking that hip hop is, you know, the cause of that, you know, they're misguided.
Right.
You know, we need to sit down and really talk about, you know, what's going on in these communities and what can be done to change it. And hip hop was a big part of empowering these communities for a long time, and was on a course to do that. And, you know, it can get back to that.
Giving voice to the voiceless.
No doubt.
Dave Mays, the founder, creator of The Source Magazine. He is back. He's in Chicago. He's relocated here. He's going to have Dave Mays Media. We'll check out all the stuff coming up, including a podcast, which is really about can Chicago be the new force, the new epicenter of hip-hop, that's coming out. Also, you can see Dave, he's going to be featured in the Fox documentary on the 24th of September, which is about Biggie and Tupac. This month, actually tonight is the night, the 21st anniversary that Tupac was shot in Las Vegas. He died a week later, but 21st anniversary tonight. Dave Mays, a pleasure to have you here, to meet you, and thank you for your work at The Source, and thanks for your observations tonight at the big table. Appreciate it.
I've had a great time, and thank you very much. You do an excellent job, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Download here on 720 WGN. That was fun, Dave Mays. Source Magazine. Were you a Source guy, Pete, growing up? No? I remember that, man. Source was like a... That was a hot... That was the, that's where you'd get the big profile interviews of all the rappers. It's good. It's a good magazine. Interesting to see what... I love it. I love the idea that Chicago has gotten to a point, regardless of what kind of music or genre or anything like that, but if you're going to be attracting moguls to town, saying, hey, this is the town to be at, that's the takeaway to me. Dave Mays went to New York City to launch the Source magazine. You know what I mean? Like that, like he left Boston to go, I got to go to New York. That's where it's at. And now, after, you know, soul searching and saying, hey, where do I have to be if I want to start something new? It's Chicago. That is incredible. That's incredible. Great to hear from the guy who really was at the epicenter of a movement that's turned into a mainstream. So we'll pay attention to what he's doing. Watch that documentary on the 24th about Biggie and Tupac, and hopefully have Dave Mays back, right? Now he's in Chicago. Coming up, let's talk Cubs. Let's talk Sox. Capital Cubs, lowercase Sox. Sam Panionovich would be here. I want to ask you. I swear, I watch all day. I'll watch ESPN before we come in, and they have the show that's on basketball. And this is the off season for basketball. But I need to admit that I am a rabid basketball fan. I love it. I love the NBA. And there's so many things that don't have to do with the Bulls right now, because the Bulls are persona non grata in the NBA. They're considered a lottery team, so they never talk about the Bulls. But it's always, you know, watching the jump. It's all about the trade between the Celtics and the Cavaliers and what's happening in Golden State. And I'm always like, man, next time Sam comes in here, we got to talk basketball. So maybe we'll sneak some basketball in. Sam Panionovich with us in the 9 o'clock hour. Stay with us. Favorite drink on those Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls. Favorite day, Sunday. Favorite team, the Bears. Favorite store, Ventures, Sayers, Sayers. Favorite show, Danza, also the news. Weatherman, Skillin, music, the Bulls. Favorite actor, Denny. Favorite drink on those Bears, Hawks, Sox. Favorite actor, Dennehy. Bulls. That's my favorite part of that song. Serengeti. That's one of the best songs of all time. It should be the anthem for the Chicago sports environment. It's Download here at 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman, let's go around the horn. We got baseball. We got basketball. We got hockey. Oh, hockey. And, of course, this indie game called football that starts up tonight on, thanks to Mark Wahlberg coming out with his shirt and jeans, WGN's Radio Sports. Sam Panionovich in studio to talk about what we have going on this fall in Chicago sports. Good to see you, buddy.
I thought I was blackballed like Colin Kaepernick. I haven't been around for like 6 weeks.
Ask you, you're like, oh, I can't. Oh, I got this going on. I got that going on.
Whenever you guys need me, I drop everything for you. I got to go back to the cell and figure out what's wrong with Carlos Rodon's shoulder.
Let's start there. Carlos Rodon, who I set up today in the carryout, and I was absolutely inaccurate. I said Ace has to do what Aces do tonight, but he didn't even start.
No, I mean, you were right, though. He got scratched. I was sitting there, and, you know, pregame locker room opens 3:30. You get there 3:30, 3:35. At 7:04, lineup change. Carlos Rodon has been scratched with a left shoulder stiffness, and he's a lefty, mind you. He did his pregame routine. He missed 3 months earlier this year with bursitis in his bicep, in his left bicep. He's actually been pitching really well as of late, but they scratched him 6 minutes before the start of the game.
That's unheard of. I mean, usually you'll know before that. But what's it mean for the White Sox? Nothing. I mean, the idea that they are right now in the cellar in the American League. But you're right. Carlos Rodon has been shaping up to be a serviceable pitcher, if not, of course, the ace on this team. What does it mean? I mean, obviously, he missed almost the first half of the season.
It's all precautionary. At this point in time, you know, he's a crown jewel of the future. The White Sox have the third worst record in baseball. There's no reason to rush him out there and make him throw. If he doesn't feel anything, you know, well, if he doesn't feel 100%, I guess, essentially, there's no reason to throw him out there, because you're not playing for anything. You're not playing for a division title, not for a wild card, not for anything. I mean, they're 54 and 84. So if there's any tweak or any twitch or anything that's wrong, you pull him back. That's what
you have to
do. Love
to hear Rick Renteria talking about earlier this week. He kind of talked about, yeah, once in a while I kind of throw the young names on a board.
I asked him that
question. Yeah, I heard your clip, and I thought that was great to think about him dreaming about what a 2018 or 2019 might look like.
Well, I asked him, I said, point blank, I said, Ricky, I know you have a job at hand. I know you're busy with the day-to-day. Do you ever take a step back and think about the future? Because they're the number one farm system in baseball right now, according to Baseball America. And the quote was, I sat back and started writing all the names on the board of the players we have within the system, the kids we have within the system that have been in the system, the kids we've acquired. You start looking around and you go, wow. And he's totally right, because since, I guess, they traded Chris Sale, and then eventually they traded Adam Eaton, they traded Jose Quintana, they've accumulated
amazing talent.
10 of the top 100 prospects in baseball.
This week they hosted some of those prospects. I guess more of a thing. I don't even if it was a to get a free.
Well, their seasons are over.
They're over in the minor leagues. But Michael Kopech and Jimenez.
Let me put it this way: Jimenez's forearms are bigger than your body.
But did they just bring him up to say this is what it's like? Take a look at the field. Take a couple of pictures. Now get back at it. Get out of here.
Double A Birmingham. They didn't make the playoffs. Triple A Charlotte, they didn't make the playoffs. So Jimenez was mostly in A ball. They called him up end of the year to Double A. Kopech was mostly in Double A. They called him up to Triple A. But those teams did not make the playoffs, so they're
their
done.
Season's over, right?
Yeah, their season's over.
There's no way that they would be in White Sox uniforms in September?
No way. There's no reason to rush them. They had such good seasons. I mean, you want to end on a high note with such young players. I mean, they're both under the age of 21. So there's no reason to rush them up. Now, the question is, next year, when do you push the envelope? I've heard Michael Kopech could be on the Chris Bryant plan, which after, you know, 40 games, May 15th. That was one of your first shows.
Right.
I called you.
I know. I remember.
When the Cubs called up Chris Bryant. You're like, wow, look at this sports department. We're pretty proactive here. But Kopech, the way he dominated this year throughout Double A, and then they called him at the Triple A. I asked Rick Hahn about this about 3 weeks ago. I said, why has this kid gotten stronger? Because usually when you're 20 years old and you throw a lot of gas, you run out of gas at the end and you get tired and you wear down. He got better. He got stronger. He threw harder. He was dialing up like 98, 99, you know, in August and September. And he said that he thought that Michael Kopech's year exceeded all expectations. So I think Kopech will be up next year.
Wow.
And Jimenez, who was, you know, hitting .333 in Double A, hitting home runs and doubles, he was slugging high. He's on the fast track too, but it's all about control now. I mean, next year, you're kind of playing for keeps next year. So I think the year to really push it all forward and put all the chips in the middle is 2019.
Oh.
But at the end of the day, if these guys are dominating in the lower levels, you've got to pull them up.
Well, let's talk about that, because Yoan Moncada has not dominated. He hasn't had he hasn't really been the kind of player in since his call-up that you've been like, wow, this is lights out. This is Hoskins out of Philly time. I mean, Yoan Moncada's hitting, what, barely 200?
189.
He seems to have trouble
not hitting his weight.
So my point being that guys like him and Ronaldo Lopez has had a good start, and Lucas Giolito, do we automatically assume those guys are on the starting roster next year?
Oh, Moncada's up for sure. I mean, you can't send him back down. You don't want to ruin the confidence. You look at his numbers, 189, but the on-base percentage, if I were to tell you his average is 189, what would you guess his on-base is?
I don't even know. What is an on-base, 300?
Well, 323. I mean, but the gap is pretty big between average, which is sub-200, and on-base percentage. He's got a good eye. He draws a lot of walks, which is really good. And it's one thing to teach somebody the strike zone. It's another thing to teach somebody how to protect. And he really does know the strike zone. His batting average on balls in play tells you he's pretty unlucky right now. I mean, he's putting balls in play. They're just right at somebody. So, I mean, he looked at the advanced metrics, the advanced stats. He's going to be fine. You know, he's 22 years old. All right. He hasn't played a full season in Major League Baseball yet. But they called him up because they wanted something to hold on to. I mean, if you're the White Sox ticket office, you're like, please give me something. Give me something to hold on to. Give me something that we can sell. And
that's the new marketing.
I mean, he's
the
number
year?
One prospect in baseball. Yeah.
Give me something.
Yeah, quote, give me something. White Sox 2018.
Well, this probably will be the last time we talk about the White Sox. I think this might be the end of the
until
year.
Until when? March?
Until March.
Okay.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Sam Panionovich in studio, and let's talk about the real deal. The Northsiders, the number one team in the NL Central.
Don't forget about the Bears.
And the Bears, yeah. We'll talk about the Bears, too. It's Sam Panionovich here. We're talking sports. Stay with us.
Go, go. go, Chicago Cubs. Win that game.
Sam Panionovich is here. Let's talk Chicago Cubs. The Cubs, the first place team in the NL Central, and their lead just gets bigger. They're beating up on the Bucks tonight. That'll give them, I'm not sure if, I don't think St. Louis plays tonight, but that's going to give them a 5-game lead going into a big weekend series against the Brewers. Taking 2 out of 3 almost secures the NL Central. Sam, do the Cubs have what it takes to win the division, and or do we have to start talking about what's going to happen next?
I'll tell you what. In July, I read an article by Nate Silver, 538, in the ESPN family, and it said the Cubs have the worst World Series hangover ever. You flash forward to where we are right now, September 7th. Cubs actually have one of the better World Series hangovers of all time. So they've turned it on in the second half. And you mentioned a four-game lead on St. Louis. Cardinals losing right now 1-0 to the Padres. Padres are awful. So if all things go well, the Cubs would have a 4.5-game lead on Milwaukee, 5 on St. Louis if they protect this lead, which they have right now. It's 8-1 in the seventh inning. They should. Look, they have the most talent. I mean, we've known that year. The question was, can they step on a throat? And they haven't been able to. I mean, the bullpen's been erratic. You've had some timely hitting that hasn't gone in their favor. But, I mean, you look at that lineup. I mean, good Lord. I mean,
Wilson Contreras is coming back.
Right. He should be back this weekend.
So that's a huge...
But on paper, if you were to line up the three rosters and I asked you to pick one, which one would you want?
Right. Now, let's do what we shouldn't do and talk about the playoffs. I mean, I can't remember. I remember this a couple years back, that there was the rule that you couldn't play the same division team in the playoffs, but that's not the case anymore, right? If the Diamondbacks come out, they play the Dodgers in the first round, and it'll be the Cubs and the Nationals.
Well, the way it would work, it looks like it'd be the Cubs and Nationals. The Dodgers are the best team in baseball,
right?
So they would play the winner of the wild card game,
right?
Which looks like it'll be the Diamondbacks, and I guess essentially it'd be at this point the Rockies.
But how great would that be if the Diamondbacks got to the playoffs and they played the Dodgers? They're the only team in baseball that have just beaten the Dodgers.
I mean, and I like Arizona. Actually, I have a ticket in my back pocket. It's 75-1 on Arizona in Vegas to win the whole enchilada. So I am a Diamondbacks fan.
That is such an obscure bet.
I don't have my my Diamondbacks hat yet, but yo, they're cooking right now.
They are, man. They're
82
hot.
And 58, just behind the Dodgers at 92 and 47.
And I have to say that the Dodgers were running away with it, but it's been the Diamondbacks who have
the Dodgers 1-9 in their last 10. Yeah, they're kind of sliding.
And most of those losses against the Diamondbacks. But okay, so the Nationals look to be the team, and it's almost a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, it's almost done.
So, I mean, how do we match up to the Washington Nationals? I mean, Dusty Baker, that's a negative for the Nationals.
Well, Dusty will throw his starters into the ground. You know that. I mean, Strasburg, if he's at 130 pitches, he's fine. He's good to go. You know, throw him back out there. He can go 170. Why not? The issue I have is the bullpen. And on top of that is Joe Maddon deciding who to throw in the bullpen. And the one thing that nobody's talking about in the media is that last year Joe Maddon had the ace up his sleeve, or all the Chapman,
right,
who he could throw out there for two innings, three. Can you go seven? Are you ready in the third? I mean, he threw Chapman into the ground, and that's why Chapman's shoulder pretty much fell off in New York this year. I mean, Chapman's not even closing anymore, which is fine. I mean, when you trade for somebody that's a free agent at the end of the year, you can do whatever you want with them. But right now, I mean, C.J. Edwards can't throw a strike. Justin Wilson can't throw a strike. Hector Rondon has been questionable.
Is it possible that we see starters? I mean, because they have enough talent where you go, I mean, like a Mike Montgomery has to go back in the bullpen, but I mean, a Lackey, guys like that who could maybe eat up two innings like they did with Aroldis Chapman last year, instead of being a starter, staying in the lineup?
Well, I've heard they've been stretching out Wade Davis and that he's possibly ready to throw two innings. You're shaking your head no.
I don't like that. There are only a few pitchers who can do that in baseball.
There's a couple, and of that couple, there's one that can maybe last long term because it'll kill your arm. I still think, though, rotation wise, the Cubs get in, and they should get in. You line that rotation up with Lester and Arrieta and Hendricks and Quintana. I think that's still the best rotation in the National League. Now, your offense has to carry the load. They're going to have to knock runs in and do their job. The bullpen is the question mark. I mean, you look at the back end of that bullpen. Do you trust Wade Davis? Right. He's been spectacular. He hasn't blown a save in the regular season. issue is, it's not the regular season once you cross into October, and you have to start pitching in high-pressure situations, and that's the issue I have. When you're facing Washington, and it's a one-run game in the eighth inning, and you pull the lineup up, and it's, you know, Harper and Zimmerman and the heart of that Washington order, who are you going to put in? Who's your go-to guy right now? I don't know if there's a concrete answer in that eighth inning.
The two questions I have, Arrieta, of course, he's
going to miss a starter two,
but that might have some residual effect in a playoff matchup. And also, what's up with Addison Russell? Another guy who I'm not sure if he's back. He's still in the DL. But the idea that a kid who disappeared this year, he didn't play well at all, but it seems like the Cubs are much better off when he's at short and Baez is at second.
Well, the rumor is under the rug that Russell has a much tougher injury than they're letting on. That it could be a plantar fasciitis tear, like the muscle could be torn. And they've been kind of, you know, saying, well, he's day-to-day, he's going to go rehab, and then he went to rehab in Iowa, and it didn't work out. So for what I've been able to gather, it's Javi Baez's shortstop position to lose right now. And that could be good, it could be bad. I mean, he's a boomer bust player, though. I mean, there's so much high, but then at the end of the day, there's so many lows, too. He's like a roller coaster of a player. But Russell, I wouldn't put the pressure on him to come back into a pennant race and, you know, come back in and just, all right, hey, go back to shortstop. I don't think it's fair. There's been some off-the-field issues. Him and his wife have been dealing with some things and the injury. So I don't know if you can count on Addison Russell going forward, at least this season. So I think it's Javi Baez at short. It's a combination of Happens over at second, obviously Bryant at third, Rizzo at first, and then you figure out who's going to play center field. Right. But I wouldn't be counting on Addison Russell this year in the playoffs.
Let's switch to a different sport, the sport that's coming up here on Sunday. Chicago Bears kick off their 2017-2018 season. I think – yes, there is a 2018 date. I think it's the first New Year's. Like, it's a New Year's Day kind of game, right? Like, because it could easily be a 2017 season and no 2018.
I actually like the Bears to cover but you the do. Spread That's this what weekend. Ask. I think they're going to cover seven.
Let me ask this question, because I ask Adam this as well, Adam Hogue. But what is the identity of this squad? Is this a defense-first football team? Is it a running for? What is the identity of this 2017 Chicago
you
Bears?
You nailed both of them. I think they could be a top 10 defense. You look at the names on the front of the line, they're very strong. You look at your Goldmans and your Unrains and your Floyds and your Trevathans when he's healthy and your McPhee. Is he healthy? Is he in the best shape of his life? I have no idea. I mean, like, they said he was and then he wasn't. But this will be a pound and ground team on offense. They're going to run the ball. Jordan Howard behind that line, Benny Cunningham, Tariq Cohen. They're going to put Mike Glennon in a position to just win games by being a manager. It's kind of like Kyle Orton. Kyle Orton wasn't bad here in Chicago.
Yeah, but they never won with Kyle Orton.
But they got far with Kyle Orton. It just don't turn the ball over.
Yeah, they went 8-8 with Kyle Orton. Kyle Orton never won a team. I mean, it was Rex Grossman's team.
No, he had a couple winning records. Let's sell him too short.
He was replaced in the season they went to the playoffs and lost to John Fox in Carolina. He was replaced by Rex Grossman late in that season.
But
didn't
Mike Glennon
the next year.
They
so
are
I'm
not
saying,
going
like,
to throw Mike Glennon out there and say, all right, win this with your right arm. That is never going to be the case.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate. Is there any team in football that wins playing that kind of football? It always is the quarterback. It's always having an Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston. Football no longer is third down, punt, and fourth. It doesn't work like that.
Right, because it's not 1982
right.
anymore.
Right, but that's the problem I have with that style. I mean, at some point or another, there's going to be a third and eight.
The interesting conversation is this. Ready? Okay, so everybody asks, well, when is it Trubisky's time? And everybody has an answer. I think it's after the bye, after week nine. I think it's Trubisky's time then. What happens, honestly, in week one when Glennon comes out and he throws two picks in the first quarter and you're John Fox and you're sitting there like a total bum? I mean, at what point do you feel the heat?
Well, that's my point. My point being that Mitchell Trubisky is more like a Russell Wilson than Mike Glennon is. I mean, you need a guy who's going to scramble with a third and eight and make a play. You see quarterbacks, even tonight, I mean, Tom Brady and Alex Smith. I mean, Alex Smith is probably the closest to Mike Glennon that is in the league.
Glennon's even slower. Yeah. The issue is Trubisky, in high school and in college, he never played under center. He was a shotgun quarterback in high school. He was a shotgun quarterback in college, only played 13 games in North Carolina. So the issue is, can he master the offense? Does he know how to call plays? Can he read defenses? Can he audible? I don't think he can yet.
Yeah.
Once he masters that, though, in practice, the key to the car is his. There's no doubt about it, because I think eventually he gives you the chance to win more games than
Who's the MVP on this squad? Who is it? Is it Jordan Howard? Is it the defense of Leonard Floyd? He's going to be defensive player of the year?
Connor Barth, the kicker. I don't know. I do think that the offense will run through Jordan Howard. I think defensively I'm looking for a big year from Leonard Floyd, who was a first-round pick for them a couple years back. He's going to be really good at rushing the passer. I do like McPhee if he's healthy. Goldman, if he could stay healthy. The MVP, though, I think at the end of the year, I honestly think after the bye, when the Bears could be 2-6, they could be 1-7, they could be 3-5, at that point in time, you give the keys to Trubisky, and I think they start making some progress. If they win, look, they won three games last year. If they win 5 or 6 in 2017, that's a good year. It's
if
a good
win,
year.
If they win 5 games, is that it for John Fox?
Yes, of course. You've got to go 8-8, 9-7. You got to make the playoffs. He was not brought in by this regime. They brought him in because they thought he could change the culture, which he has. But they also looked at what he did in Carolina, what he did in Denver. They said, oh, well, this guy can turn things around. Turning it around means go to the playoffs. And if you're not in contention to at least compete for a playoff spot or lock in a playoff spot, you can't bring old man River back. I mean, what's the point?
The Bears have been in the playoffs one time since their Super Bowl appearance in 2007.
Yep. They fired Lovie Smith. He went 10-6, and they sent him packing.
I mean, it's something to think about in this major market in the NFL. A major, major
Well,
team.
Mark Trestman and Phil Emery, the calculator dorks, they ruined the team.
It's just, I mean, it's
everybody gets an orange slice and you swim before practice and everybody sings Kumbaya. Doesn't fly in the National Football League.
I like my coaches as authors. That was a Mark Trestman. He was
what
an author.
What a dork. You are a dork, Mark
I like
Trestman.
My author coaches. Sam Panionovic, get back to the cell.
I will.
Before I tell your bosses.
Thank you.
Good to see you. All right. It's the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Playing Never Have I Ever coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, 312-981-7200. It's working on some just there in the break. Here's what I've got. Ready? Never Have I Ever Played Saxophone. That's. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I wanted to join the band, in like grammar school. I blame my parents for not being, you know, the next great musician, because I wanted to join the band, play saxophone, but it was like $20 to rent. And my parents were like, it's too much money.
It had that smell too, I'll bet. Like that band smell of the instruments. We're like, what is that smell?
Oh man,
that's a used saxophone. The
Clarence Clemens.
You could have been that musician. You know, I could be interviewing right now, and you'd be like, "Well, I started when I was 6."
Yeah.
Like every time we have one of these stars on, well, I really got into music when I was 4 years old. All right, Ramsey Lewis, I'll bite. You're amazing. I didn't do anything when I was 4. I had I had one truck, and my friend had another, and we slammed it into each other.
Well, thinking back, though, as it turns out, my parents were probably right for not spending the money, because I've tried playing instruments since then a number of times and always just stopped doing it.
And just think about all the trouble with the reeds. There's just like so many wooden reeds everywhere, stepping on them. That'd just be no good. I remember this. This was a moment in – this will tell you a little bit about society. So when would I have been – this would have been – you get to 5th grade, right? So what, 5th grade, 10 years old? I would have been – it would have been like the early 80s, 1983, 1984. And I remember there was a band teacher, and it was the day that you got to pick what you wanted in the band class. This is the instrument you will be working with. There probably was a fee too, but it was the idea like, what do you want to be? You know, the guys are like, drum, saxophone, maybe a little clarinet. I'll do clarinet. I'm like, I'd love to be the flute.
You wouldn't play the flute?
I was like, I'll do flute. You know, I think it was like
a big Jethro Tull fan.
Yeah, I think at the time it was like, I come from a man down under.
Oh, yeah, man, work. Right, yeah, great.
So I was like, I'll take flute. And the band teacher was like, that's a girl instrument.
Really?
Yeah, they talked me out of it because of a gender conformity, 1983. Yeah, so there you go. I should write a book about it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, if that happened now, oh, my God.
You can't tell me what instrument to play?
or what bathroom to use. No. I mean, there is – I mean, I just remember that being like I wanted to – I thought it was the coolest instrument because – and I had no idea that it was – but, it, yeah, I mean, it, in if you look at the composition of a band, like a band class at that time, the flute section was all women or all girls. All
yeah.
10-year-old
yeah.
girls. You know, there were no guys in there. So I was told that that was not going to happen.
Really?
So what did he? They gave me clarinet.
Oh, that's more manly.
Yeah, that's more manly. That's more klezmery. Maybe they thought I was Jewish, and they're like, "All right, get in there with the clarinet." The what I remember though, and the other thought on it is, I think the first I remember we did a concert in the gym, and I think he had to play like "Mary Roll Along," "Mary Had a Little Lamb," mm-hmm. essentially. And I remember they gave us the info that said if. Because I wasn't very good at it. And, you know, you had to read when you played clarinet. So it'd be like, if you didn't do it right, it'd be like. Meh. I remember they said before, if it's not working out, if your read's not working out, just fake it. Right?
Oh, they tell you that.
Yeah, I think that
they
was
don't
like
want to ruin it.
A little secret because they don't mm-hmm. want you to be so off tune. So I faked it. Like I did the whole two songs that the fourth grade class
didn't
had to
do
sing.
Anything.
I just, went, just I just pretended like I was doing it. I went through the motions.
Lips.
Yeah. From,
yeah, faking, right. I guess. You can't say lip syncing.
So, or... I mean, it must have meant something to me. I mean, the shame of that experience sticks with me. I'm talking about it on the radio when I'm 43 years old. You know?
When I took a guitar class at the Old Town School, you know, you take the class, and then at the end of the class, you do a concert for other classes. And I had a very similar experience of
faking
not being
these.
Very good, you know. So just kind of really being very gentle with my strumming.
That's one time. Like, that's what you can do in karaoke as well. You really don't want to do the karaoke track. You just go. And then, like, because a karaoke track, especially in some of the low-rent places, there's a little bit of vocal in there.
Yeah.
So you can just kind of, like, fake it. Like
guide it along a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I really, really want. So, yeah. So, anyway. So, yes, that's for the never have I ever, never have I played. Saxophone.
Or flute, I guess, right?
I guess flute. Yeah, let me put that down too. Or flute. This one's going to be changed pretty quick because across the street here on Michigan Avenue, a new place opened up and I'm going to try it. But never have I had poke. Is it poke? Pokey?
Is it the fish? The bowls?
Yeah, like the, almost like the burrito bowl, but mm-hmm. it's sushi. Never have I ever had poke.
Yeah. They have one close up, huh?
Yeah, in the Nordstrom across the way, they got the food court up there next to the Sbarro. It's going to be a tough call. There's going to be the poke place, and I'll be like, oh, but Sbarro. They got the pepperoni. They got the sausage. They got the calzone.
Yeah.
It's a Sbarro.
Have you been, speaking of restaurants in the area, have you been traumatized by the new Dunkin' Donuts?
Is it over?
Yeah.
No, coming off a vacation, I didn't go. And when I was on vacation, I did some house cleaning because it's a staycation. And I found in my drawer an unused Starbucks card. Always good. A present that was given to me for Christmas or one of the stockings or something like that. And so now I found myself, I don't know how, they don't tell you how much is on the card. So you just kind of guess it. It's a very,
it's
kind of the worst in the way
you're,
$3. Yeah. So I've been doing, the last 2 days I've been doing that. Because I was free, but I didn't know that if you're not familiar with the summertime routines of mm-hmm. Pete Zimmerman and Justin Kaufman, you get here earlier than I do, but 2-3 o'clock, and there is a special at Dunkin' Donuts in the afternoon where an iced coffee, because I think they just want to get rid of it,
mm-hmm.
is a dollar.
Yeah,
and it has been the lifeblood of ours for the last couple months, and. My guess is that it is terminated. It's over now.
Well, that I guess that particular promotion is over, and that worked for me because I get here right around 2, and it would be two to six, an iced medium iced coffee, but now they've gone to $1.50 iced coffee any size, but doesn't start till 3.
What are they doing? What kind of strategy is that?
I go there at 2 o'clock. There are lines out the door trying to get that dollar iced coffee, and they take that away from me. You just can't feed me this caffeine and then take it away.
They're in a conference room somewhere. Be like, what if we went $1.50 an hour later? That just sounds like there's just bad triage, right? That's no good. Yeah. I don't like that deal. We're the unofficial spokespeople for this company.
I know, because I went in there on Tuesday. He just gave me whatever, you know, $2.69 or something. Like, $2.69, what's going on? And then I looked, and there's the new sign. I'm like, son of a gun, you got me for it.
They don't even tell you, right? They try to sneak it by you. I had an experience just the other day where I went to the Walgreens to get a prescription, right? And it's a pill that I take like every day. It's like one of these daily kind of things. But they made us move to like a 90-day supply a couple months ago, mm-hmm. So it's up. I go in there and they go, the doctor denied the request. You need to go to the doc. Like, they say you have to have an appointment. And okay. I find out later when I call my doctor, like, you got to come here more than once every 6 years.
Oh.
That's the thing, you know. I'm like, what do you just want my $40 copay?
Yeah.
Knock it off. You know what I mean?
Want to make sure everything's taken still.
Oh, yeah, really? Is that what they're really concerned about, me and my body? I think they're like, nah, hey,
take an oath.
We got to shake the tree. We got to shake the tree. Get some copays out of these guys. Deny everybody's prescription. Let's get them in here. It's slow. September. That's what they're doing. I'm the Rush Limbaugh of conspiracy theories for internists for your physicals. Anyway, the woman says to me at Walgreens, she says, it's denied. I'm like, well, you could have told me that. I did the automated thing and they said, it'll be ready tomorrow. So I show up and it's denied. I'm like, you should call me so I don't make this trip. And she goes, well, I can give you a couple pills since it's a daily thing and you're out until, you know, to get to the doctor's appointment. I'm like, all right, that's great. So she comes back and she says, the pharmacist who is right around the corner, that's a joke of the Walgreens. I mean, you could see his white lab coat. The pharmacist says, since the doctor denied, we can't give you anything.
Nothing.
Cut
short. Cold turkey.
And this—the whole point of the story is that I go, all right, like, because she goes, she actually said to me, but I'll put it back through and see if the doctor will give you a. I'm like, all right. Like, I didn't even respond. I just turned around and walked away. Yeah. Like, I was just like so defeated. I didn't even want to argue. Like, I didn't. It's kind of like at the Dunkin' Donuts. If I went into Dunkin' Donuts, they said $2.60, and I thought it was a dollar. Like, there's parts of me, and I know this. It's being a Kaufman, being Lenny's kid. And I'd be like, you said it was $1.10. I'll sit in there for 25 minutes and argue.
Right.
But for whatever reason, yesterday with Walgreens, I'm like, I don't have time for this. Like, yeah. I just turned around. Like,
I think that's probably the best move.
I was just like, I'm not even going to entertain this conversation anymore. And then when I called my doctor, this is so embarrassing, but I called my doctor and they go, you know we've moved, right?
Oh, no. It's been that long. They've probably moved twice.
I was like, oh, yeah, I knew that. Well, you're calling the wrong number. No, I know. I got it. I got it. It's all. No, I got it. He's over on State Street? Okay, yeah. Okay, good. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. We'll talk about Berwyn. We're going to be in Berwyn next week, and we're going to play Never Have I Ever. Get them. They're coming in right here. I love it. Just looked over at the screen. Got a ton of them that have come in. People want that pizza. Never Have I Ever for pizza. Stay with us. Yes, it's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, coming up, we're playing Never Have I Ever, but Friday night, next Friday, not tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we got a great show, but next Friday, we're going to be in Berwyn. It's a location for the next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour, presented by Allstate. Join me for a live broadcast of the download Friday, September 15th at Laverne's Tavern in Berwyn from 7 to 10 p.m. Laverne's newer shop, craft beer place, lots of craft beers. It's owned by the same guys who own a place in Glen Ellen, a place in Wheaton. It's kind of interesting. It's interesting because it's all around the annual Oktoberfest celebration, which is happening in Berwyn, which is touted as the largest Oktoberfest party in the western suburbs. We're going to be there. And that just, we're setting up the show now. We're going to talk to people in Berwyn, but we'll be doing the broadcast live from there. There's going to be food and drink specials, all that kind of stuff. But it's really sort of a Oktoberfest jam. And it's got us thinking, and we're like, what are we, what would be a good Berwyn segment? And I started thinking about what I know about Berwyn, right? That's the part where I don't know that much. I know that Berwyn had a big marketing campaign. They had the billboards all over Chicago mm-hmm. saying, hey, Berwyn, you should move to Berwyn.
Come on out, yeah.
I know that Berwyn is home to a couple great restaurants, including Freddy's, Italian place. Great. Because I had a friend who lived around the corner there on Schofield. Berwyn is also the former home of the sculpture of the Cars. They had all the Cars stacked up. That's
right.
Gone now.
Yeah.
Forgot what you called that, but mm-hmm. that would be a good thing to talk about. Maybe get this whoever put that together on. Svengoolie, of course.
Svengoolie, yeah.
And I saw Svengoolie's gonna Rich Kaa's gonna be on Patty tomorrow. Which I think is awesome. I mean he would be a great guy to get on in Berwyn.
Yeah.
Just for Svengoolie's obsession with Berwyn. But other than that, I'm not sure what his connection is to Berwyn. He says Berwyn.
Yeah, I think that's it.
That's it.
I don't think he's from Berwyn.
When I a while back, one of the guys from Schadenfreude, Steve, lived in Berwyn. He bought a bungalow out there, so we would go out because he was the only one who had like enough space for all of us, and we would do like he had a house, so we would do a week of writing. So he wrote a script out there, you know, and I forgot what block he was on, maybe Schofield and 16th, I forgot, but there was a place called Paradise. But it was Paradise, like it was, and it was an ice cream shop. So it was like Paraice, you know, like Pada Ice.
Yeah.
But not Paradise. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I was like, that's great. Oh, they said 708 says Freddy's was in Cicero. All right. Sorry about that. The Car Stack was called the Spindle.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Anyway, I would love that. That's pretty much all I know about Berwyn. Roosevelt Road, right?
They have a movie out there for I don't know if the restaurant's still there, Outre Monde or something like that, or if it was a French casual restaurant. It was really good. I'm not sure if that's still there, but I know that they, you know, since it's like so close to downtown,
they
have tons of like great entertainment options.
Well, 16th Street Theater is there. We've had people on the show from there. I love it. I love Berwyn. I always thought that was great. When we spent time there, I was like, this is an awesome town.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I mean, it's sort of the...
And that Laverne's looks great.
Yeah.
Have a craft beer.
It does look
beer.
Good, yeah. They've got a
like
whole
the,
thing.
Like just the beer, the picture of the beer like on their website. It looks delicious, whatever that is.
630 says Freddy's isn't Cicero, but close enough.
Yeah.
So thank you, 630. 708 was much harsher. You're wrong. Freddy's is in Cicero. 630 is like Freddy's in Cicero, but you know what? We're not talking about that far off. But yeah, I'm excited to go out there. I've always loved it out there, and I think it's awesome that that's where our hometown voice is going to be. And it's Oktoberfest, so we got to get some polka up in here, right? We should do. We just got to get a big Berwyn polka band. Well, speaking of clarinets,
mm-hmm.
right?
Is it technically a polka band? Because wouldn't that be Polish?
Oh, yeah, I guess it would be Polish.
But it's, some
yeah, you're
sort
right. Not,
of...
No, like a German...
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
Accordion,
yeah,
right. You know, like when you go up to Lincoln Square...
Yeah,
you know, like those
the,
two,
yeah,
like the
right.
two guys...
The guys
that
play
the Brahms. Yeah.
Gunther and Siegfried or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Those guys...
My when I was just here last time and we went in there, I told the story on the air. But the you know, when I used to go up there to the Brauhaus when I was 21 years old, we would tip those guys in the fishbowl that they had out there to play Lady in Red, like that. So they'd be like, "I never look so lovely as you love today. This is shine to the Lady in Red." And when they're up there, my buddy Neil was back up there, and they tipped again. He goes, "Oh, I haven't played that one in a long time." And I'm like, "That could have been like 20 years ago."
New
like, I was the only one. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think anyone else in the history since I left when I was 22 years old
has requested
Lady in Red. So go up to the Brauhaus this weekend and be like, "Yo, can I get Lady in Red? Here's a fiver." They'll probably do it for $2.
Left a good impression.
Yeah. So, yeah, so you're right. It's not a polka band, but it would be more like a Lederhosen type band.
Yeah, yeah.
German.
So, you know, similar in style, I would imagine.
Yeah. They'll probably hate that we said that.
Because, you know, the beer barrel polka.
Yeah, the roll out the barrel.
Yeah, roll out the barrel. Yeah. And
yeah, we can get I'll see if I can get those guys from the Brauhaus. Come on. They'll not give up their spot because it's a Friday night. But 630, a couple 630 said Fitzgerald's. Of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It'd be great. That's a great one. Of course, Mr. Fitzgerald there stepping down. Be interesting to talk to him as well. So, yeah. So, we're going to Berwyn next Friday. Come on out. Like I said, it's a it's special Oktoberfest-inspired menu. Other specials at Laverne's Tavern, the annual Oktoberfest celebration in Berwyn. Visit the events page at WGNRadio.com for details. A WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate Chicago's own Good Hands. That'll be next Friday, the download in Berwyn. If you live in Berwyn, you're like, all right, we get it. That's enough.
Enough.
Right?
Exactly. I may crash that party.
You should.
I might.
Why not?
I might.
Let's talk to Adam and everybody upstairs and see how we can get
these.
How great would that be?
I mean, I only do the news.
We love it. I love it. I don't like the fact that I got to go back to the station. We should do a full remote. Esmeralda should come out. She should do Berwyn only traffic.
Could I just yell Berwyn every time? Yeah. I want to do that.
Yeah, you just tell us what's going on Roosevelt Road, on the other roads. That's all I got.
I could do it from the windows.
Or maybe we can just get Sonny Svengoolie out there himself.
I know, right? But that's what I'm saying. He's gonna be on Patty tomorrow, so I guess can put in a good word. It'll be good. All right, this is Chicago's very own 720, WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. All right, we're going to play Never Have I Ever coming up here. 312-981-7200. There we go. Thanks, Rob. It's download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Time to play Never Have I Ever. This is a simple game that we play for prizes. Just tell us what you've never done. For instance, never have I ever been to a college basketball game. Right? It's a simple game, and people are already texting in. We will pick the winners tonight. We're giving away a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's, the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. 312-981-7200. So fun. 312-981-7200. Let's get right to it. I got to get through all the people telling me Freddy's is in Cicero. 708 says, never have I ever understood why the Sunday Catholic Mass on TV is rated PG. Huh? That's a bit. Good start. Never have I ever graduated from high school, says 847. No punctuation on that either. I had to, I'm sorry. No, that's a joke. Well, my dad didn't graduate from high school, I don't think, but he went back and got his GED, then ended up getting a master's degree. So, okay. 779 has said, never have I ever, this is Larry. Larry says, never have I ever ate sushi, cheered for the Packers, been to a soccer game, been to a Starbucks, gone to Amco. That last one is very specific. I get cheering for the Packers because you're a guy from Chicago. I get sushi because that's a specialty food. I guess I get soccer if you don't like the sport. I've never been to a soccer game myself. Been to a Starbucks. I mean, now I don't know what's going on there. But never have I ever been to an Amco. What is Amco? Like a auto parts store? Never been to the Amco?
AAMCO.
Right?
I think spray paint. They paint cars.
So it's not that weird that you've never been there, right?
I mean, if you never needed your car sprayed.
Right. AAMCO. All right.
They used to run the commercials with the honking horn. AAMCO.
Right. So it's not called Amco, or is it called AAMCO?
No, I think it's Amco, but I just remember being annoyed by the honks.
I always thought it was an auto store.
you're driving in your car and then you hear somebody honk and it's the radio.
That's for the worst.
Sorry,
the worst is road sound effects on your radio commercials. Are you sick and tired of this? What? All right, let's keep going. Never have I ever, as an adult, had an accident in my pants. Good for you. I can't say I'm in that category. Oh. 43 years old, 224 says I'm 43. Never have I ever been to college. Like you've never enrolled in a college or you've never been on a college campus. Those are two different things. The worst? No, they're not playing the worst. I love it. There's always. All right, there we go. 312-981-7200. I'll do another one here. Never have I ever used a ShamWow. All right? Was a big, remember that? Remember the ShamWow? Never have I ever used one. So 773 says, never have I ever had a frozen TV dinner as a kid or as an adult. I'm 65 years old. Everything homemade. Wow. Never have I ever had a frozen TV dinner. There's a big stretch, though, to go from never had a frozen TV dinner, only homemade. There's a lot in between there. When I think TV dinner, I think the old Salisbury steaks, right? The Swanson Hungry Meal. But there's a lot of things. I mean, the frozen pizza, does that count as a...
Yeah, I would guess so.
Frozen TV dinner?
What about like a lean cuisine?
Right.
I used to be on a lean cuisine kick.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, the idea... there's a big difference between saying, never have I ever had a frozen TV dinner. Everything is homemade. Because there's a lot in between there that's not homemade, that's also not a TV dinner, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And I feel like if that were the case, like everything is homemade, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible to dedicate all your time to cooking new meals.
Right. I would get so bored, right? I feel like that would be that's almost unattainable. Like the idea that you would have a affinity to only do homemade meals every single night of your life. Would you ever go to a restaurant?
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a fast food drive-thru? I mean, that's all piping hot to order, but it's not homemade.
I have to say that I used to get lean cuisines. And you end up eating two. You'd have an app lean cuisine and then another lean cuisine because there's just not enough food. But since I got married, my wife cooks, and we've been together in 7 years.
Not even using the microwave.
I don't think that we've had any type of frozen meal like that, an already prepared meal.
Yeah, right. I do it almost every night with the chicken burrito bowl I get from Costco.
Yeah, no.
Where I peel the top of the plastic and then put it back in, mix it up, put it back in. Classic. And then I forget to eat it. It just sits there. Then when the show's over at 11:30, I go to my office. I'm like, oh, cold Costco chicken burrito microwavable dinner.
Yeah, heat that right back up.
You don't even need to. It's better cold. All right, here we got a winner early on. 773 says, never have I ever played hacky sack or used a porta potty. I like that. Do we combine those together?
Go to an outdoor festival. You can kill two birds with one stone.
There you go. Go to a Dave Matthews concert.
Yeah.
You're in business. Not only that, but you'll play hacky sack and you'll play the two sticks.
What's that?
The ball, you know, where you get the two sticks in the thing and you're like.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fave as well. With the hacky sack crowd. Maybe an ultimate frisbee. I don't want to put too much pressure on you, but there's a lot of things you could do at that point. 312-981-7200. Let's take a break, and then we will continue. I got a ton of these that are lining up here. So we've got plenty more to talk about. We're playing Never Have I Ever here on the download. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. All right, playing Never Have I Ever here on the download, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. All right. Got some good stuff. Mary chimes in. I always love when Mary chimes in. She's always got good stuff. She says, all right, there are numerous current popular celebrities that I have never seen. Literally, I don't know what they look like. So for tonight's Never Have I Ever, I'll just pick one. Never have I ever seen Jay-Z. You got an audible shriek from Pete Zimmerman in the booth.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
I can see never hearing the music.
And seeing him. I mean, he's next to Beyonce.
Yeah.
I guess if you don't follow celebrity.
Have you ever been to a grocery store and seen a People magazine of something or, whatever?
Yeah, I don't know about that one. That's a tough
Flipping
one.
Flipping channels.
Yeah. But hey, I guess I could see it. I mean, I will say that Jay-Z doesn't, it's not like he's on a sitcom. He's not an actor, so he's not crossing over to a different genre. He's not going into a different discipline.
Yeah.
You're not going to catch Jay-Z on a sitcom walking in on 2.5 Men. You're not going to catch Jay-Z in a film doing a dramatic turn. He is a hip-hop mogul. He does rap music, and he stays in his lane.
Yeah.
He's very good at it, and mm-hmm. he's one of the best of all time. But if you're not into that genre or you just skip that entirely, I could see there being no crossover.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I follow
you,
tons of Jay-Z related things on Twitter where I'm
you're
seeing
fans of Jay-Z.
Yeah.
You follow Jay-Z news.
That's a good one, though.
Yeah, that is.
That's a really good one.
Never have I ever seen Jay-Z.
Yeah, she's got to make this a series because I'm interested in the others that she hasn't even seen. That's a good one.
All right, we'll keep going here. Never have I ever seen The Bean in Chicago, this 810. I used to see that. That's cool. I would say a lot of times sculpture, you go out and you check out a sculpture, a piece of sculpture that has a lot of tourist traction, and you're like, all right, this is cool. But there's something about The Bean when you get close up and you get into that spot where you see yourself in 19 different reflections that you recognize. You go, cool thing they did with art.
Yeah.
You're like, that's the one thing where I'm like, there you go. I like my art to be interactive in 2017. I feel like The Bean does that. There I am.
Yeah.
Over there too.
Yeah, check it out.
Right.
Come on down.
And if you get in the middle of that thing in a very crowded day and you look up and you really look up trying to find yourself, you will get pickpocketed. So
Be careful. We went to, speaking of art, we went to see the Murakami exhibit.
Awesome, right?
Yeah. And we went on the weekend, so it was pretty busy in there. But there was a couple that were doing their engagement photos.
In the exhibit?
In the exhibit.
How do they let them do that? They just buy a ticket? They buy three? They buy the photographer's
ticket? Yeah, so like they're in there in their suit, and she's in a dress, and they're just taking, and a professional photographer is
inside the museum while it's open. I would think that would be against the rules.
I wanted to complain to somebody.
You should have just gone to
And they were really, dude, the Facebook. Guy was really dopey looking, first, second of all, or whatever, first of all.
First or second.
Yeah.
Right? It's a tight race.
I mean,
between
if they were both like, if they were Beyonce and Jay-Z, it'd be something different. But, and on one hand, I'm like, those would probably make pretty cool engagement photos.
Yeah, I'm assuming they would be. I mean, it'd be great to have engagement photos with a professional artist stuff behind you. But
it was
like you have to pay for that.
It was just, really annoying. I'm trying to enjoy the exhibit. You're walking around and every room you go into, they're in there, mugging for the professional photographer.
Like you're right. Yeah. That's no good. Wow. Did you like the exhibit, though?
Yeah, it was great. We had the guy from the Museum of Contemporary Art in here. I'm going to register my complaint with him. I'm going to email him now. We were on vacation. Now I'm back into complaining mode.
You should have walked in front of their pictures.
I'm
sorry.
Right.
Just kept on. Yeah, that's what I should have done.
You should have. That would have been a great idea. Just kind of like in the background.
Interrupting them.
And then you could, or do a Photoshop thing on Facebook or whatever, that game.
Can you believe the chutzpah?
Well, I mean, engagement photos?
Or it seemed like a wedding type thing was coming up.
I guess it is a thing, right? You get your engagement photos.
They're probably the worst people because, you know, when they show those pictures to people, they're like, we were in the museum. I mean, you got our pictures taken. It's like,
this is a very exclusive gallery. You guys, it's really hard to get into, and we got in.
Have you ever heard of that artist?
This artist is so world-renowned. He made a Prada bag. He's on billboards, you guys. You know Kanye West? He did art for Kanye West. And now he's in our engagement photo. We're going to be married forever. All right. 815 says, never have I ever jumped out of an airplane willingly, and Amco is a transmission repair shop. There we go. Good double. Thank you. Playing the game and giving us some knowledge to what Amco is. 224 says, I've never changed a tire. I'm with you on that. It's like I would say I have maybe like three go-to fears in my life. You know, health, family, career, and tire blowing out on expressway. That like comes in fourth. Like I always feel like this is going to be the moment where I'm just driving and like it just pops. I don't even know it works that way, but
fear of like an accident happening, or fear of having to change a tire.
Well,
it all encompasses the same thing.
It's like the idea that how you would control the car, get it to the side, and then what would you do in that moment? Because I have an old car, which I've been complaining about, and it's so funny. You know, I complained earlier on tonight, I think, about the key that wasn't working. Someone texted and it's like, you can get a battery and replace that. I'm like, I know. But I think I mangled this key. This key is on its last leg. He goes, well, take care of your stuff better.
Good advice.
Good advice. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for saying that. You're right, Dad. Thanks a lot. But the idea of like, I have a tire. My car has a tire on the back.
Mm-hmm.
It's decorative.
So you're ready.
But it's there. So I'm like,
it's a full size.
It's a full size, ready to rock.
Yeah.
So it'd be super embarrassing to have to call like a tow truck or AAA or whatever, and be like, so they do it. Like it's taunting me.
Because you've talked about how you're not particularly handy in doing stuff.
I feel like it can't be that hard, right? Put the jack underneath the car.
Yeah. Do you still have the manual?
Take the lug nuts off. I don't know. No, probably.
I mean, I think that's what happened when I had to do it. Yeah, I remember, I panicked like you. I'm like, I never have done this. I'm a dude. I should be able to handle this.
Did you handle it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You got it done?
It got done. Right. I mean, yeah. If I can do it, trust me. Anybody,
now I feel a lot better. That fear has been removed.
I am not handy at all.
It's been moved down to like eighth. now it is right behind the how much money's on my Starbucks card. That fear has moved up. Oh, is this the end? They're going to tell me it's not enough. 920 says, never have I ever seen a James Bond movie. 847 says, never have I ever gotten anyone pregnant, and I'll be 50 in October. Yeah, me. That's what they say. Yeah, me. I don't know enough of the circumstances of your life to wonder if that's a yeah, me. You know, I don't know if there's a lot of people out there that try to get pregnant. They can't get pregnant. That could be a sad situation. But in this case, it seems like a 50-year-old bachelor is like,
yeah, it sounds a little braggadocious.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Been around the block.
Been around the block.
Yeah.
There you go. I don't have anything else to say about that. 630 says, never have I ever driven my ridiculously stupid, expensive car through a fast food drive-thru for fear of food tampering hate that goes with car shaming. This person's got such a great car. He's like, no, wow. I drive my Maserati through here. They're going to spit in my burger.
Is that a thing?
I don't know. Like, I've never heard that.
Car shaming?
I mean, I guess if you had like a really nice car, there's always some sort of tension around the idea of why you have a really nice car. And you know, like personally, as someone who doesn't have a really nice car, I don't give a lot of respect to people who do have really nice cars. Like in traffic, I don't let them in. You know, or, like, you know, if it's like, if we're at a four-way stop and it's questionable who's next, I'm going next. Take your nice car and you wait. So maybe it's the same concept with car shaming when it comes to fast food. Like, someone's going to look out and be like, that lady at McDonald's going to look out and go, got a Maserati here.
We got to do something.
Let's short him on the nuggets.
Got the Porsche SUV. I'm going to accidentally spill that shake right along the side of it. There you go, buddy. Take that.
Shake right on the side. Now get yourself a car wash, one of your fancy car washes.
That's a nice Porsche Cayenne you got there.
Have you heard of that, though? Is that a thing?
I've never heard of that.
Like a car shaving through a drive-thru?
I mean, I get car envy when I'm on the highway.
Sure. Man, but, and I would just assume that they don't see the car till you get up there. Like, I mean, pull around. It's a speaker, you know? Maybe they have the black and white camera, but I mean, I would think that they're not interested in what kind of car it is. Right?
Yeah. I don't know. I have to investigate.
I don't know. Something new, but I like that one. 312-981-7200. We're playing Never Have I Ever tonight. Top prize is going to get yourself a pizza. So all you got to do is tell us what you've never done, and you could walk away with a Lou Malnati's pie. How about that? Playing Never Have I Ever here on the download. Thanks, Rob. 312-981-7200. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, let's get back to the awesome text tonight. We're playing for pizza. Let's have some good stuff. All right? Here's a perfect one. This one I'm putting in the top three. Esmeralda's going to be the judge tonight. She's so good at it. From her days of judging nicknames for the Cubs.
And American Idol.
And American Idol, of course. 815, Never Have I Ever Had a S'more. Ooh. Never had a s'more. All right, wrote it down. I love a s'more. I've been known to make a s'more over the stovetop indoors. Yep. Turn that on. Get the, get the marshmallow all lit up. Put it in there. Maybe a little microwave. I can do it all inside. Yeah.
You don't get the smokiness,
you don't.
Right?
You don't get the smokiness.
You could do it over the stove. Over the flame.
What I do is that's what I do. I do this the flame.
Oh, okay.
But you're right. It's not like grill. It's not charcoal or even it's whatever the stove. It's something that makes it different. And then you kind of like heat up the marshmallow, and then you can put that right on top of the, because it's hot. You put that right on a chocolate. It melts the chocolate and puts the s'more all together.
Yeah, they sell those now.
They do
kits.
Oh, you really?
A little flame thing, yeah, too, you can.
Of course they do. How did they not come up with that 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago? All right, Donna, let's go to Donna. Donna, what have you not done?
Never have I ever laughed at the Three Stooges. Everyone else I know laughs and thinks they're hysterical. Guys love them. My daughter was 2 years old. The first time she saw them, she was slapping her hands on her knees laughing. I've never once laughed. I don't get it.
Yeah,
I don't get them.
I mean, if you're not into physical comedy, and that's all it is. I mean, the Three Stooges is pretty one-dimensional, right? It's the idea that they get mad at each other and they whack each other.
Right, but is that a character flaw in me? That I no longer, I don't think they're funny like millions of people do?
No, because here's a good example. I don't like gross-out bathroom humor. Like, it's just not a thing. It doesn't make me laugh. Doesn't make me laugh when someone.
So something about Mary didn't do it.
Right.
For
exactly.
You,
exactly. Like, mm-hmm. I don't. That doesn't do it for me. But
now, Three Stooges. I laughed till I cried.
But that's. I mean, it's subjective, right? I mean, I don't necessarily get into the Three Stooges either. But there's probably a lot of stuff that I laugh at that you don't, and vice versa. You know what I mean? It's hard when you come to. But you shouldn't beat yourself up over not liking the Three Stooges or laughing at them.
I think it's a character flaw in both of us.
Good. Well, at least we've come to a consensus, Donna. That's good. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Shouldn't beat herself. A lot of people don't like this Three Stooges, right? I don't know if I'm. I mean, I think I've laughed at them, but I don't know if I would go out of my way to watch Three Stooges. If they're on, I'm like, eh.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a kid, I liked the Three Stooges, but then.
Yeah.
You know, as an adult, you watch it and you're like, what?
What is happening? I'm more of an Abbott and Costello guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought those guys were hilarious. All right. Let's keep going here. Never believed a word that came out of Trump's mouth. All right. That's not really a good never have I ever. That's just political. This is a better one. 708. Never have I ever worn bicycle pants or rollerbladed. Those are two different things. And so the question I have is, you say you never have you ever gone rollerblading, but I'm assuming you've gone biking. You just haven't worn the bicycle pants, right? So you've been on a bike. You haven't worn the bicycle pants.
Mm-hmm.
And you've never been rollerblading. Did I read that right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, there we go.
It's rollerblading. I mean, I guess I still see on the lake, you still see people rollerblading. It's not as, you don't see it as frequently as you used to, but there's still people like gliding along.
Like Fletch, the movie Fletch, rollerblading on the beach in Venice Beach. Never have I ever been fired from a top-rated morning show. Eric? Oh, Eric and Kathy, I see.
Yeah, Kathy got fired.
Kathy got fired today. Although, all right.
How petty would it be if Eric did text
I know, right?
It?
The person puts, like, I love the 847 they put on the back, Eric. That's good. Yeah, that's a strange story, and I don't know the but I mean, she'd spent a lot of time at that radio station. She hasn't been in that radio show for a while, so mm-hmm. I think it's a weird headline to say she was fired, right? Today they were like, Rob Feeder said she was fired. I'm like, well, felt like that was coming. Mm-hmm. She hadn't been on the job for a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Terminated, maybe contract ended, parting ways. The idea made it feel like, you know, she didn't, like they fired her because she hadn't been to work for 8 months.
I mean, according to the memo, they said that, you know, she was relieved of her duties as of today. And, you know, according to that Rob's column, it was, I think she'll get paid, you know, until the contract is up. So I don't know how that works. I guess
Very
that's how a contract works.
Yeah. Eric and Kathy no more.
Yeah.
What are they going to do with the billboards? They got to go find them and take them down? Probably all down now by now.
Yeah, they probably do. I mean, I know
it'd be a good exhibit. It'd be a good museum exhibit, wouldn't it? Of like the old Eric and Kathy billboards?
I'm looking really dopey, you know.
You said, what did you just say, Eric?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's a shame. It's
quite
a legacy they had there.
I mean, it's hard to have that much success in any market, and for them to have that success for such a long time, it's incredible. Yeah. So hats off to her.
Yeah, absolutely.
773 says, I'm 50 years old and never have I ever gotten a flu shot. Okay.
Hmm. I was a flu shot. I was always reluctant to get a flu shot because I would never get the flu, and I was always worried about getting the flu shot and then finally getting the flu. But then I was working for a radio station where they would come in and give you a free flu shot every year, and eventually, like, oh, yeah, I guess I'll get it, you know, since it's here for free. I don't have to go anywhere.
Right, right.
And then, you know, thankfully, now I'm an advocate for the
you
flu
do
shot.
It? Yeah.
Go get the flu shot.
I know, and I think last year was the first year I didn't do it. I think at my old job, they made a big deal, like, where you would come into the conference room.
Yeah,
conference
similar.
Room mm-hmm. Sunday or Tuesday. It's so easy. But they don't do that here, you know? So I feel like then the idea of, like, having to go to Walgreens is not.
Then here's what we do. Book a flu shot segment.
Oh, and they come and do it for you?
And they come and do it for you.
Yeah.
Have a, you know, doctor come in, explains the benefits of getting the flu shot.
And then you get yours?
And then you get yours, yeah.
And get some donuts while we're at it?
Why not?
Or better yet, we see if the Dunkin' Donuts that we go to can, instead of giving us the special, they just give us flu shot instead. Something like that. Since we're going there anyway. Every day.
That would be...
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great.
Dunkin' Donuts, you get an iced coffee and a flu shot?
They should do that.
That would be
good.
Good
promotion.
All right, let's keep going here. Never have I ever, even when I was angry, not gone a day without telling my children I love them. Oh, that's a good one. Never have I ever not told my kids that I love them every day. Well, that's great. 219 says, you're thinking of Mako. That's the spray painting car place. Amco is the transition place.
I just had the A's mixed up.
Yeah. You had me. I yes-anded that. Like, oh, yeah, spray can. Cool. Didn't really do it. So I was with you. Never have I ever watched one episode of any reality TV show. Wow. No Survivor? That seems like that would be the number one show. Like, I feel when people say that they don't recognize if I said, well, do you watch this? They go, oh, yeah. Because there are a lot of reality shows that people don't assume are reality shows just because they're not the Kardashians.
Like Project Runway or Top Chef?
Those are reality shows, right? Or is House Hunters considered a reality show?
Probably.
Or
Real People.
Yeah. I mean, that's the idea. It's the unscripted.
I mean, they're more real than, Iggy and Diggy.
Great guys. Huh. Yeah, I wonder if because I wonder if you could really tease out what a reality show is. Right? I mean, you could say news programs are reality shows. But I wonder. I mean, is this person just watching situational comedies?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it? I watch TV Land, and then I'm out? Or do you find themselves...
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I guess I don't really watch that many, so I mean, I could see somebody, because right. I watch your Project Runway, your Top Chef. I've watched...
I don't watch right now. I don't have any, I should be for Tracy's segment we do on Fridays, but I don't watch any reality television. None of it's in rotation. None of it.
The Bachelor in Paradise. I've watched a few of those, especially, we were off on Monday, caught the 2 hours.
Good.
Man, they really stretched that thing out. I can see that.
All right.
No, Richard Hatch? Right when Survivor was kind of taking off as the new type of TV show?
I feel like you would just do it out of curiosity.
Yeah. Right?
I don't know. 630 says car
the real
shame,
world.
Car shaming is a thing. 847 says, you guys are cold. I don't know what that's referring to. I'm sure we are cold. Never have I ever repaired a scratch, dent, or damage to any of my cars. So 708 is saying, there is a scratch, there is a dent, there is damage. I just don't repair it. I'm in the same camp. I have a couple scratches on the side of my car. And my wife is like, we should get that fixed. I'm like, why? What, were we going to make a ton of money off of this 12-year-old car?
Yeah.
And I guess it's just for decorative to say you take care of the things, but I also feel like at this point.
Yeah, when I see your car, though, I don't think, oh, my God, look at this jalopy, trucking down the road.
Trucking. I guess
it's respectable.
It's respectable, yeah. It blends in. It's a blender, as we say in the business. 847 says, I have been driving since the 70s, and never have I ever had a traffic ticket, but was pulled over for doing California roll at a stop sign. Realized, I'm not immune. Oh, no. Did they lose it? Oh.
I don't know. All that time?
My dad was like that growing up. He bragged a lot about it. I don't get traffic tickets. Mm-hmm. My mom would always get pulled over for something. My dad would be like, I'm the good driver. He'd almost bring it up all the time. Like, that doesn't happen to me. So one time he got pulled over. It was a notorious place to get pulled over is Bull Valley. Bull Valley is a sort of unincorporated town out between Woodstock and Crystal Lake, right?
Some sort of speed trap over
there. Yeah, it's very wooded.
Yeah.
You can go fast. You don't realize what's happening there. And the cop pulled him over. And he probably could have got off because he had such a sterling record, but he got mad. Like he almost was like, he was mad at the concept because he was such
couldn't
a great driver.
Yeah.
He couldn't believe it. He was like, you're wrong. Like is the vibe he gave the cop, you got the wrong, let's check your gun or something.
It's like Albert Brooks in Los Angeles. We've got very good radar.
So yeah, I think that was the end of his run. So,
oh man.
Yeah. So from that point, that was great for the family. We could get rid of that braggadocious. I'm such a great driver. Really, what happened in Bull Valley? Don't turn around. I'll turn around. 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take our last break. We'll come back, and we'll read a couple more. We still got some here, and we'll pick tonight's winner. Never Have I Ever. Stay with us. Playing Never Have I Never here. Never Have I Ever here. 312-981-7200 here on the download. We're giving away a pizza tonight for the best Never Have I Ever. Let's get to the rest of these before we have to do that. Let's go to Ann on the line. Ann.
Yes.
What have you never done?
out of the 47 years I've worked of my life, I've never been fired from my job.
Wow.
From a job.
There you go. That's great. Have you worked in the same job?
25 years as a waitress.
Okay.
22 years in retail.
Wow. That's a stretch. Good for you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a good, that's a very positive never have I ever. That's good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Okay, there you go. 25 years as waitress, 22 in retail. Well, Mary says, yes, I could do a series of people I've never seen. You ready for this? Pete, you're going to love this. Lena Dunham.
Never seen Lena Dunham.
Never seen Lena Dunham. Ryan Gosling. He's hosting the premiere of Saturday Night Live, La La Land as well. And are you ready for this last one, which is now I think Mary's pulling our chain. Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
She's never seen that.
How have you not seen The Rock? I mean, he is a guy who crosses over.
But we were talking about this off the air a while ago. I don't think I've ever seen anything with The Rock in it. Other than, you know, like hosting Saturday Night Live, but I've never seen a Rock movie.
Okay, I'll give you that. But you've seen the countless promotions for The Rock, whether it be a billboard or on television.
Of course.
I mean, he's in blockbusters every summer. So, I mean, The Rock for Baywatch or for whatever, he's going to be the guy out front. So he's hard to miss, not only being on a television show like Ballers, but he's in movies like crazy. He's in four or five movies a year. That's a hard one. I don't believe that one.
Also, how do they know?
If they haven't seen him, right.
Right, because they could just be like, that's a man on TV. And they just might not know his name.
If they put one and one together, they'll be like, oh, that guy. That guy was always buttoning his cuff. That guy, whose suit looks like it's two sizes too small. Whenever he's on Ballers and he's wearing his suit, he's so muscular. It's just like, you just wonder, can you customize it so that do they customize it so the suit just clings to the bicep? It feels like it, doesn't it?
That's a
good one. 773 says, I am 50 years old and never have I ever taken a cruise ship vacation with you. Never been on a cruise ship. No. Never have I ever gone to the bathroom on a plane. I fly international to Japan often.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. Never have I ever watched a second of Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. 630 says, never have I ever tried Malort. That's a good one.
It's a big Chicago thing.
Yeah. Never have I ever... 847 says, never have I ever been able to figure out the inventions of the crazy guests of yours. It's one guest, Steve Gatlin. Russ says, never have I ever learned how to swim, and I'm 45 now. Just stay away from water.
It's never too late to learn.
Yeah. 815, never have I ever owned a house. I'm 64 years old. 630 says, never have I ever gone commando. That's really kind of in the too much information category. I like it, though. Do the flu. 779 says, do the flu shots in Berwyn.
Ah, there you go.
There you go. Roll out the barrel. All right, next up, we're doing flu shots. Get down here.
Not for anybody in the audience, though.
Right.
Just for you.
Just for me. I don't even share it with you or Martyr or Adam or any of the guys there. You're just like, no, Marlene, sorry. I got a... 630 says you should do Eric and Kathy billboards on the swap meet show on next Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. I bet you they'll...
773 says, never have I ever worn a white suit. I tried on my wedding day, but my wife said no. What are you, Casey and JoJo? I was wearing white suits on the wedding. I like that, though. You get a top hat on that? 630 says, who's Richard Hatch?
That's his name, right? Richard Hatch?
Yeah, right. I think they're making their point.
One of the original contestants on the original Survivor had a little bit of tax issues.
Right. Never have I ever gone cow tipping. Okay. 847 says, never have I ever been to the Taste of Chicago. 847 says, never have I been to Wrigley Field.
Taste of Chicago, I could understand that. Well, I mean, I know, like, now it's like Taste of Chicago is like 45 minutes now on a Tuesday afternoon. It used to be like 3 weeks.
I know, right?
Now, all right, Taste of Chicago, we're bringing out our menu. We come to buy Wednesdays from 2 to 4.
Right.
We'll be down.
It's so good.
It's so short.
It's so true. It's like Rahm Emanuel, he cuts the ribbon, and then they quickly tie the ribbon back together, right. And they're like, next year, you guys can have this next year. One turkey leg. We're selling one turkey leg this year. 262 says, my mother at 90 was proud of the fact she had never donated blood. 815 says, at 67 years old, never have I ever met a horse I couldn't fall off of. 219 says, never have I ever pulled a weed. And 847 says, never have I ever listened to Eric and Kathy. So there you go. All right. So I've got my three here. You ready? So these are my three that I think that I would pick to be the winners. They're going to get a Lou Malnati's pizza tonight. Let's see here. Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. All right. So Esmeralda got three here. Ready? 773 says, never have I ever played hacky sack. Okay. The second part of that's even better. Or used a porta potty.
Right.
That's one text. That's a great one, right? Number two is, never have I ever seen Jay-Z. That was Mary. That's a good one. And number three, never have I ever had a s'more. Chocolate, graham cracker, marshmallow. And then just an honorary mention, 847 just said, never have I ever eaten at a Long John Silver's.
Well, bless them.
Bless them.
So
those are the three. Hacky sack,
mm-hmm.
never seen Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Or never eaten a s'more. That's where we're at. What are we thinking tonight? Show your math.
So hacky sack, I've never played either, so whatever.
Okay, whatever.
It's not that, you know. A lot of people, I think, just see that as silly
out, right?
And don't even touch it. The Jay-Z thing, I don't know. I feel like they probably have seen him and they just didn't know who it was.
Right, right.
I'm going to go with a s'more.
There you go. That's what I was thinking, too.
It's such a basic thing that's kind of, wow.
It's so easy to put together,
exactly.
too. I mean, right now you can go to the 7-Eleven and they have s'more stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like
I wonder if they've eaten s'more things.
I wonder if they have like an allergy and they can't eat chocolate, marshmallow, and graham crackers together.
Just that combo.
They don't have to worry about it because there will be no s'more on the pizza they're going to get from Lou Malnati's. Thank you, Esmeralda. The winner tonight, never have I ever had a s'more. Thanks for playing. Great stuff tonight. Great conversation starters. Thank you as well for learning new things like what AMCO does and as well what car shaming is. Didn't know anything about that. All right, coming up next tonight, Patty Vasquez takes over. We're pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Also, we will be back tomorrow night where we reload tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to reload this week's news. A lot to talk about. Lauren Cohn and Ray Long are going to join us. We'll also talk about the World Music Festival, which starts, and we'll check in with my family that's having to make a tough decision about what to do in Florida with the evacuation of Hurricane Irma. So that's coming up tomorrow.